Why do we never get an answer when we're knocking at the door with a thousand million questions about hate and death and war? 'Cause when we stop and look around us, there is nothing left we need in a world of persecution that is burning in. It's not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way that you mean it when you tell me what will be. And when you stop and think about it, you won't believe it's true that all the love you've been giving has all been meant for you. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking silence of the mountains and the crashing of the sea. There lies a land I once lived in, and she's waiting there for me. But in the gray of the morning, my mind becomes confused between the dead and the sleeping and the road that I must choose. I'm looking for someone to change my life. I'm looking for a miracle in my life. And if you could see what it's done to me, to lose the love I knew could safely lead me to the land. Not the way that you say it when you do those things to me. It's more the way you really mean it when you tell me what will be. We'll be right back.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, May 6, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. Eastern till midnight. If you're listening live over a radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, access code 449-389-pound. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, tonight's scripture reading, we're going to pick up where we left off last week. We're going to be picking up in chapter 16, verse 16. Give me a second. Gospel of John, chapter 16, verses 15 through 33. All things that the Father hath are mine. Therefore said I, that he shall take of mine, and shall show it unto you. A little while, and ye shall not see me. And again, a little while, and ye shall see me, because I go to the Father. Then said some of the disciples among themselves, What is this that he saith unto us? A little while, and ye shall not see me. And again, a little while, and ye shall see me, and because I go to the Father. They said, therefore, What is this that he saith? A little while. We cannot tell what he say. Now Jesus knew that they were desirous to ask him, and said unto them, Do ye inquire among yourselves of that I said, A little while, and ye shall not see me, and again a little while, and ye shall see me? Truly, truly, I say unto you, that ye shall weep and lament, but the world shall rejoice, and ye shall be sorrowful, but your sorrow shall turn into joy. A woman, when she is in travail, hath sorrow, because her hour is come. But as soon as she is delivered of the child, she remembereth no more the anguish, for the joy of a man is born into the world. And ye now therefore have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart shall rejoice, and your joy no man taketh from you. And in that day ye shall ask me nothing. Truly, truly, I say unto you, Whatsoever ye shall ask the Father in my name, he will give it to you. Hitherto have ye asked nothing in my name, and ye shall receive that your joy may be full. These things have I spoken unto you in Proverbs, but the time cometh when I shall no more speak unto you in Proverbs, but I shall show you plainly of the Father. At that day ye shall ask in my name, and I say not unto you that I will pray the Father for you, for the Father himself loveth you, because ye have loved me, and have believed that I came out from God. I came forth from the Father, and am come into the world again. I leave the world and go to the Father. His disciples say unto him, Lo, now speakest thou plainly, and speakest no proverb. Now we are sure that thou knowest all things, and needest not that any man should ask thee. By this we believe that thou comest forth from God. Jesus answered them, Do you now believe? Behold, the hour cometh, yea, is now come, that ye shall be scattered, every man to his own, and shall leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things I have spoken unto you, that in me ye might have peace. In the world ye shall have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world. Gospel of John, chapter 16, verses 15 through 33.
Okay, tonight we're going to look at habeas corpus. We wrote a paper. It's a memorandum. Anybody wants to follow along with this, it's up on our website, nationallibertyalliance.org. go to members, I believe. Hang on a minute. I think that's where it's at. Yeah, highlight members and come down to... maybe it's under grand jury. Yep, it's under grand jury. So on the blue bar, you'll find it under grand jury. It's the second from the right. And click on action against the judiciary. You'll find a number of memorandums of law we wrote. One of them is habeas corpus, memorandum of habeas corpus. So we're going to read through that. And after we read that through that a little later, if anybody's got any questions or comments on that, we can talk about it. But right after that, we're also going to talk a little bit about our filings that we're going to be making hopefully soon. You know, we're still in writing. I'm kind of thinking maybe we're still about a month away. Got a lot of writing to do still. Yeah, quite a few more memorandums, and we are working on the paper. We have about 42 pages of information or things we're considering to put into this paper. And we're going to discuss the fact or the way that people can join this case in existing cases. So we'll get into that a little bit after we talk about the habeas corpus. Now, I don't think the habeas corpus is going to take much more than 15 minutes to read. It's a pretty short paper. Let me see how many pages it is. It's only 5 pages. So we're going to read that first, and then we'll discuss our upcoming filing. And anybody who wants to participate with bringing their case over into this case, we'll give you some information on how you can work that out with us. Okay, so we'll go over to the memorandum on habeas corpus.
Memorandum of law, habeas corpus. The purpose of this memorandum is for the court to take judicial notice of their duty concerning the unalienable right of habeas corpus, whereas every person unlawfully committed, detained, confined, or restrained of his liberty or property under any pretense whatsoever may prosecute a writ habeas corpus to inquire into the cause of such imprisonment or restraint, and a court, justice, or judge entertaining an application for writ of habeas corpus shall forthwith award the writ or issue an order directing the respondent to show cause why the writ should not be granted. And if none of the respondents return a statement of cause for the restraint, the petitioner must be released. United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2. The privilege of writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended. New York State Constitution, Subsection 4. The privilege of a writ or order of habeas corpus shall not be suspended, unless in case of rebellion or invasion the public safety require it. Federalist Paper, Number 84, Hamilton. The establishments of the writ of habeas corpus and the prohibition of ex post facto laws, and of the titles of nobility, to which we have no corresponding provisions in our Constitution, are perhaps greater securities to liberty and republicanism than any it contains. The creation of crimes after the commission of the fact, or, in other words, the subjecting of men to punishments for things which they were done, were breaches of no law, and the practice of arbitrary imprisonments have been in all ages the favorite and most formidable instruments of tyranny. In the United States, habeas corpus exists in two forms, common law and statutory. The Constitution for the United States of America acknowledges the people's right to take common law of England as it was in 1789. It does not consist of absolute, fixed and inflexible rules, but broad and comprehensive principles based on justice, reason, and common sense. This is the well-known remedy for deliverance from illegal confinement, called by Sir William Blackstone the most celebrated writ in the English law, and the great and effectuous writ in all manner of illegal confinement, the great writ of liberty, ensuing at common law, out of our courts of Chancery, King's Bench, Common Pleas, and Exchequer. Habeas corpus ad respondum, a writ which is usually employed in civil cases to remove a person out of the custody of one court into that of another, in order that he may be sued and answer the action in the latter. Habeas corpus ad subjunctum, a writ directed to the person detaining another and commanding him to produce the body of the prisoner or person detained, with the day and the cause of his caption and detention, to do, submit to, and receive whatsoever the judge or court awarding the writ shall consider in that behalf. Habeas corpus ad testificandum. At common law, the writ, meaning you have the body to testify, used to bring up a prisoner detained in jail or prison to give evidence before the court. On June 12, 2008, in the United States Supreme Court case, Bantamedium v. Bush, in a 5-4 decision, declared Section 7 of the Military Commissions Act of 2006 unconstitutional because it purported to abolish the writ of habeas corpus. 28 U.S.C. subsection 2242 demands that every person unlawfully committed, detained, confined, or restrained of his liberty or property under any pretense whatsoever may prosecute a writ of habeas corpus to inquire into the cause of such imprisonment or restraint. In Brown v. Vasquez, the court observes that the Supreme Court has recognized the fact that the writ of habeas corpus is the fundamental instrument for safeguarding individual freedoms against arbitrary and lawless state action. Therefore, the writ must be administered with the initiative and flexibility essential to ensure that miscarriages of justice within its reach are surfaced and corrected. The writ of habeas corpus serves as an important check on the manner in which state courts pay respect to federal constitutional rights. The writ is the fundamental instrument for safeguarding individual freedoms against arbitrary and lawless state action. A writ habeas corpus must be prosecuted if the petitioner shows in his petition that the court ordering the detention or imprisonment made one or more of the following legal and factual errors. Number one, respondents gathered a biased statutory jury, a jury not under the common law, a jury under a court not of record, i.e., not at law. A jury which has no power to fine or imprison, thereby just jurisdiction was fraudulently acquired. Number two, there was no sworn documentary evidence from a competent fact witness. Number three, petitioner is being unconstitutionally held by a court not of record as required and defined under Article 4, Clause 2. Number four, court is proceeding under statutes and jurisdictions unknown and not under the law of the land, also known as common law. Number five, court's jurisdiction was not stated. Six, petitioner was denied due process. Seven, petitioner is a victim of barratry, maintenance, and champetry. Eight, custodians have engaged in prosecutorial vindictiveness, therefore the burden is upon respondents to rebut presumption. Title 28 of the United States Code acknowledges that it is not the responsibility of the petitioner to know by what claim or authority the state acts, but that the petitioner may inquire as to the cause of the restraint. If a petitioner requests an inquiry into the cause of a restraint, but none of the respondents return a statement of cause of the restraint, the court must presume that there is no lawful cause of restraint. On a petition for a writ of habeas corpus, the standard of review for a claim of prosecutorial misconduct like the standard of review for a claim of judicial misconduct is the narrow one of due process, and not the broad exercise of supervisory power. The relevant question is whether the prosecutor's comments so infected the trial with unfairness as to make the resulting conviction a denial of due process. 28 U.S.C. 2243, Issuance of Writ, Return Hearing Decision. A court justice or judge entertaining an application for a writ of habeas corpus shall forthwith award the writ or issue an order directing the respondent to show cause why the writ should not be granted, unless it appears from the application that the applicant or person detained is not entitled thereto. The writ or order to show cause shall be directed to the person having custody of the person detained. It shall be returned within 3 days unless for good cause additional time not exceeding 20 days is allowed. The person to whom the writ or order is directed shall make a return certifying the true cause of the detention. When the writ or order is returned, a day shall be set for hearing not more than 5 days after the return unless for good cause additional time is allowed. Unless the application for the writ and the return present only issues of law, the person to whom the writ is directed shall be required to produce at the hearing the body of the person detained. The applicant or the person detained may, under oath, deny any of the facts set forth in the return or allege any other material facts. The return and all suggestions made against it may be amended by leave of court before or after being filed. The court shall summarily hear and determine the facts and dispose of the matter as law and justice require. Conclusion. The writ habeas corpus is an unalienable right that no judge may deny. The petition need only allege a violation of due process, and if none of the respondents return a statement or of cause for the restraint, the petitioner must be released. The right of habeas corpus is defended in Federalist Number 84, Hamilton, secured by the United States Constitution, Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, and the New York State Constitution, Subsection 4, for its prosecution is demanded by 28 U.S.C. Subsection 2242. Sealed, dated, signed, Grand Jury Foreman.
Okay, let me get my board here. So we're going to open up for into Q&A, star 6, and I think a 1. Star 6 and then a 1 to get into the Q&A. We'll be taking questions shortly. But first we're going to cover a few things. We'll talk about a few things. On this paper we just wrote, again, a copy of this is found up on our website. You can find it under the grand jury, action against the judiciary. So highlight the grand jury, come down to action against the judiciary, click on that. And this memorandum was memorandum on the habeas corpus. Everyone should know how to write a habeas corpus. Looking through the law here, it's pretty clear that a judge cannot deny, although they always do deny habeas corpuses, or usually always deny. But if it's written correctly, I think it's going to be pretty tough for them to deny it. Again, it's under 28 U.S.C., subsection 2243 is where it was codified. Now, I think in this paper we wrote, we also quoted 28 U.S.C., subsection 2242. That might have been a misprint. I'll have to take a look because it might have been 2243. But everyone should look at these particular codes. It's very important. You know, the codification of habeas corpus was done hundreds of years ago, actually. And here in the United States also, we find concerning the habeas corpus once in our Constitution, and you'll find them probably in most state constitutions also. We do have it in New York, the codifying of habeas corpus into a code. And it's important that they have done that because it requires the obedience to the code to those who are, you know, working for the government, whether they're elected or appointed or hired. They have to follow their codes, their regulations, the statutes, codes, whatever you want to call them, depending on what they are. So we can quote these codes because they have to follow them. And so what I'm going to do is I'm going to write a habeas corpus. I'll try to have this done by next Monday. But I'm going to write a habeas corpus, leaving the blanks where people can fill in the information, that if someone needs to file a habeas corpus on their own, they'll be able to do so. You know, in the past, we here have been filing habeas corpuses for people coming from the grand jury. And most places or most courts, they'll tell you, well, you have to petition the court. And for some reason, they seem to think that petitioning the court gives them the ability to deny the habeas corpus. Of course, nothing could be further from the truth. I think 28 U.S.C. 2243, which we did read most of it in this paper, is pretty clear. It cannot be denied. It must be going forward. Court of justice, they must entertain the application, and they must forthwith award the writ and issue the necessary directing for the responding of people to respond to show cause on why this person is and should be remain in custody or their property seized or and they don't have to be in physical literal custody, just the fact that you're stuck in a court, you're kind of in custody to that court and you're required to come back when they tell you to come back. So you can file a habeas corpus for all of these things. But again, if anybody has any questions or comments on this habeas corpus, we're open for discussion shortly. And also, we will get a copy up on our page. Now, if you go out to our website, nationalliberty.org, and you come and click on, highlight members, and come down to court forms. It's the third from the bottom, court forms. And on that page, we started to put some papers and instructions on how people can do certain things for themselves in the court. Going back to the habeas corpus, I'm not sure whether I mentioned this, but we're going to endeavor to try to help individuals that might file a habeas corpus. Hopefully they'll do it correctly. So, you know, you have to follow very carefully the instructions that the code puts forth to make sure you cover everything necessary. And so anyway, if you file it correctly, and if the court, the judge denies it, okay, which he cannot do, he cannot deny it, then we'll endeavor to work with people with the problem with that to also for them to petition the grand jury for this habeas corpus, and we will override the judge and, you know, make a paper concerning his disobedience to the code. Which we haven't worked that paperwork out yet, but we'll work something like that out, and hopefully people will be able to work their own habeas corpuses and get that done. One of the other things we spoke about in the past is getting some instructions and information on how to challenge jurisdiction and also how to move a case into the federal court for cause. What we did do is we've got up on this page instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. So in the instructions, I just want to make a note or two in the instructions. Let me open that up. One of the key things on filing for a paper to question or challenge the jurisdiction. The requirement of law says that it must be heard. A court can't just, it must be decided is what it says. Now, it doesn't mean that the judge can decide whether he has the jurisdiction or not. No, it means some papers have to flow through the court. And the judge that's hearing the case, because he already believes he has jurisdiction. Otherwise, he would have dismissed the case. So he will, of course, deny it. So therefore, he's prejudiced, and he has to recuse himself, at least from that part of the case. And so another judge would have to decide. If you're in a town court or a village court or some court of that nature, I would imagine you'd have to move this either into I don't even think you could move it into a county court. I think it has to be moved into the state court. And, of course, you can also move it into the federal court. But, again, challenging the jurisdiction is the key. And once you file the paper of challenging the jurisdiction, okay, then 30 days after, as long as you do it properly and make sure you let me open this instruction so I go through it. You want to have a file on demand that's only filed with the court. You want to have a notice of motion. That's extremely important. If you don't give them a notice of motion, they've got this game they play, and they'll deny that the service was correct and so on and so forth. So you got to give them a notice of motion. And then you have to give the paper challenging the jurisdiction. It's quite simple. We've already written this up. It's always about due process, ultimately, or jurisdiction. And they don't have the jurisdiction, so they have to prove the jurisdiction. You also have to file an affidavit of service. 30 days is what the notice of motion will give the individuals to answer. And if they don't answer in 30 days, and they're not going to, then you can then take the case and you can file, a default. Now, we also prepared that paperwork also. So all these forms we're talking about is available up on the page on National Liberty Alliance. It's court forms. So it's under members and down third to third from the bottom, court forms. So we've written the papers up that people can use as a form, the notice of motion, the file on demand, challenge of the jurisdiction, affidavit of service, and then finally the affidavit of default. Now, you have to wait 30 days, as I mentioned. If they don't answer in 30 days and they default it and you file that in the court, now they have a dilemma. And so this is something that people can use in town courts, in village courts. Anybody that has a traffic violation, they can try using this and see where it goes. Now, if it's really that important that you need to get out of that particular court, the next step would be to move it into the federal court for cause. Now, I've been thinking about maybe moving it into the state court first within your county for cause first and then into the federal court. The reason why we've never taught it that way is because the Constitution is clear, Article 3, that the jurisdiction of the court is any situation that falls under this Constitution or the laws of the United States. That's the jurisdiction of the federal government. They have to decide on that. And for that reason, because this is a constitutional issue, a right of due process, if they deny your challenge on memorandum, through a memorandum, if they refuse and don't challenge or respond in any way to your papers that they don't have the jurisdiction, and they try to move the case forward, then they're denying you your due process, because that's part of due process. Also, of course, everything that court does is in denial of due process. So at this point, I'm kind of thinking straight into federal court, but maybe state court first and then federal court. We're going to consider that, and we'll put some information up on the website on that and what our conclusion is. Of course, people are free to do what they want, they can try the state first and then go to the federal court. But I think, like the state of New York, for instance, here in New York, they have unified the courts. And that's a pretty alarming situation, really. And that's been done quite some time ago here in New York. The big question is what does that mean to unify all the courts? But that gives them credibility. That gives village courts, town courts, and city courts some credibility just by doing that. And so I would not, in New York, take it into a state court. I'd go right into the federal court because the state court already would be prejudiced against the case, claiming that they have the jurisdiction to push it back down there and trap you into that system. So, again, that's why I'm kind of getting away from the state and thinking just go straight into federal government, the federal court. And remember, the federal court has the jurisdiction. Clearly it says that in the Constitution when it gives us what the jurisdiction is. And I'll just read that quite quickly. I think this is it. No, that's Article 4 is the law of the land. Hang on a minute. So Article 3, Section 2, Clause 1, it says here, the judicial power shall extend to all cases in law and in equity arising under this Constitution, the laws of the United States, and the treaties made or which shall be made, and so on. So clearly that is their jurisdiction. Clearly that is the way to go. I believe people would have much more chance getting through the system and winning the challenge by going into federal court than they would in state court. But anyway, we'll get into that next week. I'm going to just think that out a little further before we finalize some of this paperwork here. We also have instructions. People interested in joining their case into the case that the grand jury is going to be filing soon against the judiciary in the United States Supreme Court particularly. Anybody that wants to join their case onto this case, we have instructions for that. It's pretty simple. So you can click on that and read through that information, and anybody who wants to do that can fill out the form and follow the process. And it's not too big a process, really, and we don't ask for a lot of information. The key thing with our challenge in the courts ultimately is all about due process and opening up courts of record. And that's going to be our case, and any case really that's anywhere in this nation. As a matter of fact, I haven't found any place that really has opened up or allows the people to open up courts of record anymore. In other words, courts under natural law. And they are the courts that we go into and we file papers in are really all equity courts. And even though there is a jury, it's a statutory jury. They're controlled by the judge, and the grand juries are controlled by the prosecutor, and they operate under statutes, and they convict and go after people using statutes. All of that cannot be done in a court of record. In a court of record, the juries must be free and independent, untainted, and not controlled by anyone. They need to be informed of their abilities, of freedom of decision-making, even on the law. To decide if they don't like the law, they can nullify it. And it could be just for this case, they think the law doesn't work well with this. And again, when a federal government files cases against you, they file under USC 18 or USC 26. 26 is tax court, which has no power, authority, or anything at all. And that's a discussion for another time, maybe. But under USC 18, that's where you'll find the penal code. And that's where you'll find people being charged under those codes. And that has nothing to do with us. Now, that doesn't mean if someone breaks the law that the federal courts can't charge you with it, and you can't be... They can call up a grand jury and have you indicted and go after you. But the codes don't apply to us. But the essence of the codes could apply to us. You know, if we've done something illegally and injured somebody, and it would, even if it would be the definition of what we find in the penal code there, it could apply to us. But they can't use that code. The main reason they can't use it because the jurisdiction of USC 18 is maritime. It's the law of the sea. It's not the law of the land. So really, there are very few cases where the federal government should be able to deal with people on a federal level to go after them. For instance, if the feds were to arrest you on a gun situation, it would be pretty difficult in a court of law for them to convict because statutes aren't applied and cannot be applied there, and nobody is required to follow any statute concerning your unalienable right of the Second Amendment to keep and bear arms. So they can't restrict you. They can't require you to have a permit or any of these things. Really, the federal government should be keeping their nose out of that business. And, of course, even the state can't do it. And, of course, they do it because they're not following the law. They're not following the Constitution. They're doing whatever they please. And more often than not, they seem to make up a lot of things as they go along. And the only reason they get away with that is because we, the people, are ignorant. We don't have the knowledge and the understanding of the law. And as long as we remain ignorant of the law, then we will remain subject to these tyrants. And it's only when the people are educated enough to be able to step up and defend themselves and be able to open up a court of record, in other words, a court of natural law, until that happens, we go nowhere. And, of course, that is the whole purpose behind National Liberty Alliance, to create the necessary, what would I say, organization across the nation, ultimately, using the grand juries and the trial juries, training people on how to take control of this process, which is the people's business. But, of course, that requires an education first, and we offer that education that every individual really should know. In a course called Government by Consent. You can find that on a blue bar. It says free courses, and on the one down on the bottom is Government by Consent course. Everybody should take that course, but anybody that is planning to become an administrator for the grand jury, anybody that is planning to defend themselves in life and not have to rely on a lawyer who most definitely usually will go with the status quo, you'll lose the case in most cases when it comes to criminal things, if you have a lawyer. But people should be able to defend themselves. This course should assist people for that, to understand the law and how the process goes and how to fill out the paperwork and so on. And we will post all of the forms that we put in this course as time goes on. We'll be posting those forms up on our website right under members on this page right here called Court Forms. So we'll be filing more and more forms as we go along in that area. We're not going to include, we're going to refer to them in the course, but we're not going to include the form, I don't think, anyway. Because again, people can come here and actually download the form and then work that form according to their particular case and so on. Okay, so let's see what else we have here. Instructions to move your case for cause. Again, we don't have anything up there on it yet. And instructions and the form to file a habeas corpus, we'll try to get that up by next week. Again, this memorandum in itself lays out the law pretty clearly, and people can use that if they need to do something right away. But again, if the people expect to be ignorant and free, it's not going to happen. If we want liberty, we can't have it unless we understand what the law of the land is, and the law of the land is the Constitution. And if we don't truly understand that Constitution, which includes law, which means natural law, And it does include equity also. We have to understand the difference between equity and between law, and we have to understand how it is that we can get out of an equity case and into a law. Now, if you go to any court and you try to file a case, you'll find they're all civil cases that you can file. There's no place where you can file for a court of record. And if you're pulled in criminally, you're going to find yourself being charged with statutes and all kinds of different things, and it'll be a problem. But again, if the people continue in the ignorance, then they'll continue to be abused and continue to lose their liberties. And there are many liberties that a lot of people don't even realize they have. But we need to learn them, and people need to be able to take care of their own business. Okay, let's see where we're going to go from here. So, again, anybody has questions or comments on that or any of these things, again, into the queue, star 6, and then a 1, and we'll be calling on that shortly. Is Brent here tonight, Jen? I don't think I see Brent in the moment. You're muted there, Jan, if you're talking. You need to unmute yourself.
You didn't hear me.
We didn't hear
him. Yeah. I don't see him checked in. Unless he used his cell phone, he's not in on the regular numbers.
All right, we'll keep an eye open for him, and we'll see where we go in a few minutes with him. Do we have any questions or anything?
We do. We have a question for you, John.
Right.
Let's see. Let's get on the right page here. When our legislature leaders go to Washington, they're taught about their office and their responsibilities and other things, like the secrets known only to those who need to know in the federal government. What is it that they are taught that turns them? They learn something, could be greed, could be a secret key to the operations of the government, could be something else. My brain hasn't fallen yet. Could be the simple acquisition of powers they never knew about until getting their position. I don't know, but at some point they begin to toe the government line. What do you think it is that turns them?
Oh, goodness. I think ultimately they found their price. That's my opinion.
For sale.
And that combined with pure ignorance. I mean, I'm extremely perplexed when a United States Supreme Court justice, and I can't think of the individual's name of which one it was that I saw recently speaking about this, and he referred to us, this nation, we the people, he referred to us as a democracy and not a republic. How can a United States Supreme Court justice be a United States Supreme Court justice and not understand and know that we are a republic? After all, he's there for the Constitution. How can he not know we're a people of law and not a, we're not here by popular vote? Our nation is supposed to run by law and not the majority, which would be mob rule, of course. It's a major problem. Our founding fathers despised the democracy. They said it was really just the first step to an oligarchy. And once you have an oligarchy, which is what we've been under for quite some time, by the way, we've been under an oligarchy since Kennedy was assassinated. Our country was taken over at that point. And we haven't started to feel our freedom from that until just recently, 2 years ago, when this particular president became the president, President Trump. He seems to be the first one to really go up against them and is really taking them down. It's only a matter of time. Anybody paying attention, they can see how close we are now to finally taking these people out. But anyway, other than that, I don't know. Look, at the hearts of men, the Bible tells us, are desperately wicked. Who could know it? We have to be very careful as we walk in life because we will fall into sin, fall into wrongdoings if we're not on top of the things and have a moral mind. And when people go to Washington particularly, I mean, you're in there with the devil. They're gonna get all kinds of offerings, money and prostitution and all kinds of things. And that's what we are here to do, is to stop that. And we can stop it. We can stop it. And the only way we can stop it is we, the people, take back control of our nation, bring us back to a government by consent. And, of course, that's what our course is all about, and that's what the book that's going to follow is all about. How is it that the people can have a government by consent? And one of the powers and the authorities of the people to consent to their government is to consent in the courtroom. We are a nation of laws, to be ruled by laws, and the laws we're being ruled by, even ultimately our government is being ruled by, not us, they're being controlled by, is the Constitution. And we, the people, ordained and established that Constitution for them to obey it. And if we don't know it inside and out, then how can we know whether they're obeying it or not? And I can tell you that very few people realize how bad and how far off the Constitution we have become. And these people are outside of the Constitution, 80-90% and probably more than that of everything they do, Congress particularly, and these courts, are unconstitutional things. The way they get their money through lobbying, that's called a bribe. When an individual goes to Washington to represent we the people, we expect that's what he's going there, to represent his constituency, our will. And that's why he was elected. And when he goes and takes that funny money from these people, these special interest groups, these large corporations which lobby them, and they take that funny money, guess what? They just took a bribe, and they just sold their vote, and they're in bad behavior. The Constitution talks about bad behavior, and they are not to serve in bad behavior. Well, how come all of Congress is in bad behavior? How is it that they continue? How is it that the people don't realize these things? And it's Congress that's supposed to really hold the power to take a person and discipline them. That's their job, and yet they don't do it. They can remove a United States Supreme Court justice, and yet they don't. Why? Why do we let them get away with it? Why don't we know these things? Because we're ignorant to the law. That's why. Because we don't know the Constitution. We don't apply and require them to obey the Constitution. So we need to take back our courts. And that's just one of many ways of consenting to our government. When we the people take control of the administration of the juries, and that's what we are trying to build here at National Liberty Alliance, is building grand juries under the control of the people. Now, we're not looking to create a grand jury in every county. That has to be called in from time to time, but we're looking to create the administration for the grand jury. Take it away from the political animal. Take it away from the judge. Take it away, all of these things, from the prosecutor to control that grand jury, for instance, or the judge to control that jury. We need to spend the 8 hours or 6 hours or whatever it is to orientate that jury. We the people, and we have to have the knowledge on how we're going to orientate them and to answer their questions and help them with their paperwork, because someone has to do their paperwork, and someone has to give them information on how they are to proceed, what powers and authorities they have. One of the most important, is the power of nullification. Juries must be, it must be explained to them in the trial, for instance, that they get not only to decide the facts, but also the law. And if a law is being applied, and if it's being applied appropriately, usually against someone who's working for the government, they're under certain regulations and statutes and codes, or someone that is in some kind of a commercial or some kind of a business that's under the control that we gave the authority to Congress to control and to write statutes or codes for them, then the grand jury can look at those codes, but they have the power and the authority to deny using them. They can nullify it. And so they need to know that. When we have a grand jury that's free to be able to go and investigate further or even uncover something else, and a whole other case as they're investigating, the ability to go forward and start investigating that case too. They need to understand that. Now, the administrators need to be educated. They need they really are the investigative body for the grand jury. They are there, if people want to come. Right now, if you want to go see a grand jury because you want to make a complaint, maybe you've been to the sheriff, maybe you've been to the police, maybe you've been to different, and you can't get anyone to listen to you, you should have access to that jury, that grand jury. And that grand jury should be able to listen to you, what you have to say, and consider an indictment, and you bypass the whole other part of the process. Sheriffs that have been denied particular cases when they go to prosecutors, when they're denied something and they think that they can't do nothing else. Well, nothing could be further from the truth. The sheriff can call his own grand jury. He's got the power and the authority. He needs only to go down to the court, the local court of the county, the state court, and get in there and see the clerk and find out when the grand jury is meeting the next time and pencil himself in to meet with the grand jury because he's got a story to tell. Now, the prosecutor, I'm sure, will get wind of that and give him a call to find out what's going on, and the sheriff should say, hey, none of your business. Maybe I'm going after you. Maybe I'm going after a judge. But none of your business. And if he tries to stop that process, sheriff should arrest him right there because he's interfering with justice. And, you know, so these are the things that sheriffs don't know, the people don't know, but they need to understand these things. They need to know, and they need to take control of these things. Because if we're not taking control, then they got control. They'll continue to take their bribes. And if Congress is not going to do their due diligence to remove these people, to impeach a bad judge, because remember, the Constitution is clear. They get to sit and have their office as long as they are in good behavior. And the opposite of good behavior is obviously bad behavior. And bad behavior, because they're constitutional, and this is what it's all about, bad behavior is disobedience and disregard for the Constitution. And therefore, Congress has a duty to remove these judges that are in bad behavior, and yet they don't. I don't think they ever have. And there's lots of judges that need to be removed. Remove a few, and the rest will straighten up quickly. So people can do this, because the people have the power and the authority. We can read about it in the Declaration of Independence. We can change the structure of our government if we want. Of course, the structure is, there's nothing wrong with our structure, okay? But they can change the servants. We have that power. We have that authority. We find that in the Declaration of Independence. But if the people, you know, don't have the power and the authority to do these indictments, because that's what it'll take to remove a judge. If the judge is in bad behavior and Congress won't do its job, first order of business, the grand jury should really notify Congress, if it's a state Congress or a federal Congress, that they need to notify, whichever, and let them know of this bad behavior and expect that they're going to do something about it. And if they don't do something about it, then the grand jury could move forward to make an indictment. And guess what? They can no longer participate in their office during that process. So the people have the power to remove judges. We have the power to remove bad elected individuals that's supposed to be representing us and not their own pockets, okay, because that's what's going on right now. And that seems to be the major motivation, in my opinion, anyway. So, I guess that's all I have on that. Is there any other questions on that?
No, John, there were no other questions. There's an announcement.
We went into a lot of things there, but, right. But go ahead.
It's interesting any to think about your Supreme Court judge. I think it was Roberts. I saw that issue, and I wondered if it was a self-incriminating statement accidentally made. Because
Roberts may have done that, but it wasn't him that I heard. So I guess there was two then.
But if they're talking about the democracy, they may be one of those who was helping get us there, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Keep the slaves ignorant. I mean, you let the slaves read and write, you got a problem.
That's right.
Again, for us, you know, reading and writing is the Constitution.
Right.
You know, we need to, and if we have any questions or concerns or the meanings of any part of the Constitution, this is a very simple matter to solve. And Jefferson gave us the solution. He says, go back to the time when it was written and listen to the debates. Hear all the sides, and then you'll be able to see clearly what this is talking about. But the Constitution also was written in plain language for plain people. And so anybody that could read and write and can work their way through a dictionary, they should be able to understand that Constitution. Sometimes it's a little struggle. There are a few places. You know, we're going to cover step by step the Constitution, and we're going to look particularly to focus to unfold meaning and understanding in places that are kind of difficult. But most of the places that are difficult really aren't, well, it affects everyone. It even affects, of course, maybe the way the Congress acts or the powers and authorities that they have, okay? And one of the biggest principles and the most important thing for anyone to understand and realize as they study the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence, which is the foundation of our law, Constitution being the framework, is to take a good deep look at the capstone of the Constitution, which is, of course, the Bill of Rights. And any conclusion or interpretation of anything within the Constitution that is repugnant to anything within the Bill of Rights and extended therefore anything that affects any of our rights, that then is null and void and certainly is not the proper solution or the meaning because it cannot be against itself. Right now, the Constitution continues to stand against itself through the 17th Amendment, because the 17th Amendment has changed the meaning and the powers of the Constitution or of the different entities of the Constitution, the authorities. For instance, the 17th Amendment, which changed the choosing of senators by the states to the choosing of senators by the people. People already had their choice of representation through our representatives, Congress. Okay, the purpose of the state to have powers and authority was an important debate and argument. Go back, carry yourself back, listen to the Federalist Papers. We got them on tape, online, and we also have them in writing. So you'll find it on our website. But go back there, and you'll see the importance of the state having a say. Remember, the states are sovereign, eclipse sovereign, but they're sovereign. Again, eclipse sovereign, and they have power and authority in what the federal government has to say. They're the makeup of it. Ultimately, the states' structures are ultimately the makes up the representation, and the people make up the representation, which is the two houses that we have to write law. But once they took that away from the states, they took away their sovereignty. Because the states have nowhere to go. What can they do when they don't like what's going on in Washington, D.C.? They have no power of a vote. They had power before because they had two votes. Every state had two votes, so two senators. They no longer have that. That's gone. And that was done by design. The 17th Amendment really never passed to begin with. It was never ratified. We have proof of that. And it also changed the structure and the balance of power of the Constitution, which they could not have done. They'd have to review the whole thing, and it'd be a restructuring of the balance of power. And that would require a complete, full constitutional convention. And could not, that kind of a convention could not include the individuals that are holding elective office. Okay? And, of course, if they ever try to move that way, they'll try to get the representatives already in power to try to be the delegates, and that would be a total violation of everything because you'd have nothing but politics involved in this. But anyway, if the people don't get an education and they don't step up and get involved with what we're doing and support financially what we're doing, then we're not going to take this country back. America will never stay great again. You know, President Trump may make America great again, but it will never stay great again until we, the people, take control of our government, bring back justice in our courts. Our nation will be as just as our courts will be. And that's why there's havoc around the world. And that's why we have the CIA and other agencies causing troubles, creating wars and havoc everywhere. Because we're unjust. Our courts are unjust. Their political processing system is all unjust in the way it's being run. There's nothing wrong with the structure. But, of course, Trump has stopped all of that at this point in time, turning it around. But it's only going to return. No matter what we do, no matter how good a job he does to fix this problem, it's only going to return. It's only a matter of time unless we get to a government by consent and the people get involved and take control. They take control of the political processes, which they don't have any control at all. You know, we get to decide either the criminal on the right or the criminal on the left in a voting machine, and that's it. But we the people have nothing to say who's on that ballot, and by what what is the qualifications to get onto that ballot? And the qualification to get on, the first and foremost qualification to get on that ballot, is knowledge of the Constitution and the laws of the United States, and an appreciation and understanding of the rights of we the people, the difference between law and equity. And that's a very important point that every one of these people have to understand. Unfortunately, we have a lot of young people coming in, and they've been totally brainwashed. I mean, they want to get rid of the process by which we elect our president. The president was never meant to be elected by the people. But, the compromise came is that the states elect the president, not the people per se, but the states elect the president. That's why you can have a person with a popular vote win the popular vote, but someone else wins the vote because they have the electoral votes. And, of course, that is the states voting ultimately. Okay? Now, the compromise was, okay, let the people in the states go out and vote for president to see which way, by popular vote of that state, then they put their electoral votes towards that particular individual that they choose. And so that was the compromise. And what that did is it prevented states with large populations from controlling the presidency all the time. I mean, you could probably take 5 or 6 states, and if you can take control of those 5 or 6 states, you will always win the presidency in whatever party it is that takes control of those. That's why we have the process that we have. And these morons coming into Congress trying to change these things, talking about getting rid of that, to get the popular vote, the people should decide. Well, they haven't looked at the argument. Well, maybe they're just socialists. But they haven't looked at the argument. They haven't carried themselves back and listened to the debates in the Federalist Papers and the Anti-Federalist Papers to understand these things. So we have an imbalance of power. We have contradictions in the Constitution because of the 17th Amendment. Okay, in the Constitution, which was never removed, changed by any amendment, let me find this quickly. Yeah, this is Article 5. Okay, it's towards the end, so I'm going to read just a portion towards the end of Article 5. It's a pretty long article. It talks about that no state without its consent shall be deprived of its equal suffrage in the Senate. Now, the word suffrage is really a vote. So no state is to be deprived of its equal vote in the Senate. You see, anything that Congress does, anything that's voted on by the people, in which Congress is the representative of the people, okay, well, the states can disagree with that, and vice versa, okay? But we don't have a separation no more. The people have taken control of both, okay? And so, therefore, they elect both the congressmen, and they also elect the senators. So now, no state has an equal vote. States have no control. They're totally under the thumb, enslaved, if you will, enslaved by the federal government. They have nothing to say. They can't do nothing. And that's a big frustration. And if majority of the people, remember, we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority who participates. And if the majority of the people that participates is educated and understands these things, then we can fix them and make them stay. And we can take control of the consent of our government by taking control of our courts. And that's where it starts. We first must return the king back to the court. That means make the nature's God, the king of that court, and the people that sit on that jury, which is called the tribunal, okay, those people are the king's bench. They're to represent the will of the king, not the will of the state through statutes and things, the will of the king of the court. And the king of the court has written his laws in the hearts of men. It's written in our hearts, so we know right from wrong. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not steal. We know when a wrongdoing has taken place. We don't need a statute to tell us that. Now, of course, statutes are important. They control government. It's extremely important. We've got 54 U.S. codes, and each one of them is something that controls a part of our government, the way things are going. It's the policies and procedures, if you will. It's the regulations by which they proceed and exercise their duties. It's statutes and codes where there's a penalty if you abuse your power. They clearly write down what you can do and what you can't do. You know, it wasn't until, I think it was 1970, and I forget where I read this. I know I made a note of it, and I know I have it on my computer, and I'm going to find it one of these days. I got to go searching for it. But I was trying to search through this on the Internet using the Google, and I couldn't find it. But I did read it, and I do have it somewhere, where the federal government did not have the power or the authority to call a grand jury until 1970. And when I say the federal government, I mean U.S. attorneys could not call for a grand jury, okay, because the power wasn't codified. And it was in 1970, I believe it was, or 71, when it was finally codified and he had the ability. Well, what happened before 1970? You know, that's kind of before my time. I was young at the time. I was probably about 20 years old or so. But I certainly didn't have a consciousness of what was going on in the courts and in government at that time in my life. So I don't know what took place before that. I don't know whether grand juries came together by a U.S. attorney calling them. Now, maybe there is some other way that they could have been called into the courts, or maybe, I don't know how that would have worked. I really don't know. But I do know now that, of course, there is a statute that gives them the power and the authority to call for a grand jury. But generally speaking, they should not have had the power to call for a grand jury ultimately, because really everything they're underneath and operating under is equity. So they're all in equity courts, administrative courts. And there are clear-cut violations of law. And they have to go to, when they do violate the law and they do call the jury or something, or case is being heard, they usually hear it within the area where the quote-unquote crime took place. So they go into the state and into the county. Well, every county has grand juries because they are collected for the state. There's an administration for those grand juries, which is what we the people need to be controlling, because the fox can't control the hen house. But they do. But that's where, if there's something where they need a court of law, they can pull the grand jury from there, and that's where it should be pulled, and even the trial jury within the county through that state court. But I don't know how they did, if they did anything, and I'm not sure exactly when the penal code came into play that they started to utilize it. I'm sure the penal code has been in there for a long time. It's under USC 18. But I'm sure it's been there for a long time. But I don't think they started executing it and using it much until maybe around 1970. That's when they gave the power or codified the ability for a U.S. attorney to call for a grand jury. Maybe prior to that, they were calling for grand juries, and it wasn't codified, and they were getting away with it. I don't know. I don't know what was going on back then. All right. Anyway, what we're going to do now is we're going to move over to Brent. Brent's here, right? Yeah, I see him out there. Brent, are you ready?
There is one announcement, too, John.
Yes.
Well, head with the announcement.
You want to do the announcement now?
Let's do that.
Okay, this is about tomorrow night's meeting. I was getting some questions and email and stuff. It will be in this room. It will be at 8 Eastern time, not 9. That makes it 7 Central, 6 Mountain, 5 California time. It's mandatory for all grand jury administrators and national coordinators. And we're going to talk about the many local and state leadership positions that we have open. I'm looking for volunteers there. We have a number of topics we want to talk about. Some of them are more volunteers for, like, contacting shows to get interviews for John and Gerard. We have developed a funding letter that can be mailed out to big business, people of like mind, to see if we can garner some money there. We'll discuss that. We need to talk about Monday call issues. I keep getting calls. I used to just get emails after a call, but now I'm starting to get calls of people that didn't get on and this and that. So we are going to address that, and we also are talking about adding talk show, shoe, or maybe bell talk to our current broadcasts. Terry's been looking into that. I'm hoping she can make the meeting tomorrow night. And I guess that's about all I have, but it is at 8 o'clock tomorrow night in this same room. So come and participate.
Maybe you can drop me in my Skype a copy of a bullet point copy of our agenda, you know, everything we want to cover, and put it in an order maybe that you think we should approach it, you know, from beginning to end. I may jog it around a little bit, but see if you could think that out a little bit.
Sure.
We'll proceed down. Everyone is invited to this meeting and participate in this meeting tomorrow night at 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here in this room. And so everybody's invited to participate, and so every member and anybody, you know, we have a lot of positions opened, national positions, state positions, committee positions. We got lots and lots of positions. So anybody who wants to take on some authority and participate with what we're doing, and our goal, of course, ultimately, is bringing back a government under the consent of the people. But the people cannot have a government by consent unless they understand how it is that government is the consent, and where and what power and authority, and how do you go about making them to obey you, you know, what we have to say as the people. Yes, you can do that, and no, you can't do that. They don't listen to a thing we say at this point in time, and it's a struggle to get it back, but we're moving towards it. One of the big things, and the most important thing that National Liberty Alliance is doing, and our first point of business, the first thing we're going to do, really, when we start pushing, and we're going to be pushing soon, is to go back, to bring back our natural law courts, because they're nowhere to be found. They've been concealed. Courts of law do not exist anywhere in the United States that I'm aware of. Certainly not in New York, I can tell you that. Certainly not in Connecticut, I can tell you that. Certainly not in Pennsylvania, I can tell you that. And some other states I'm aware of the fact. But I don't. It's everywhere, it seems. Certainly not anywhere in the federal courts. You can't open a court of record anywhere. You know, what they call a court of record is a court that keeps a record. Most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. They should go back into Black's Law to discover what it means, what a court of record is. You know, they should listen to some of the Supreme Court rulings, the older rulings particularly, that talks about a court of record and the power and the authority, and that it cannot be second guessed. That even the United States Supreme Court said they cannot second guess a court of record. And a court of record is a court run by the people, ultimately representing God, okay? Because he's the king of the court, and they're the king's bench. And those people are supposed to rule in righteousness and consider mercy at the end of the day also, and look for restitution of the injured party. Not to put a person in jail, per se. Maybe some people do need to be in jail. But generally speaking, most people, I would venture to say 90% of the people in jail, well, maybe there's a lot of violence, so I don't know, but 90% of the people in jail don't belong there. Certainly not in any of our county jails, which their people are sent to that jail either by village courts, town courts, and city courts. And a jail sentence, I think, in order to be local, I think you've got to be under a year. If you get a year and a day, I think you have to go to a state prison. But I'm not sure on how that works, to be honest. So, but in any event, most of these people are there for breaking no law at all. They're breaking statutes, which they don't have to. They're there because the state thought that they were in bad behavior and tried to control their behavior through statutes and codes, things of that nature. Okay. So we should empty out all of these jails. You know, there's a lot of things we have to think about and work together as a people across this nation to bring it back to order. You know, there's no reason that we have more people in jail in our country per populace, okay, than any other country in the world, okay? We have more people in jail. And again, what was it? What was his name? Judge... Bork, Judge Bork said that that 90% of the people in our prisons are there only because they opened their mouths. In other words, they took a plea. They made a plea. They pleaded guilty or innocent when they should have been challenging the jurisdiction. Challenge the jurisdiction. Federal courts, USC 18, they don't have jurisdiction. That's on the sea. USC 26, they don't have jurisdiction. Challenge jurisdiction. It's not there. But people don't know. Again, we're going to continue in this state as long as people are ignorant. Now, the majority of the people that make the things work, you know, again, I'm trying to think who said that. I think it was Franklin who said, I'm sure it was Benjamin Franklin, who said that we don't have government by majority. We have government by the majority that participates. If we can get the majority of the majority that participates, which isn't really a lot of people per se, you know, when you look at the population, I think it's over 300 million now. If we can get the movers and the shakers, the people who really are trying to do something and make things right, okay, and get their attention and get them educated properly, then we can take back this whole everything and have government by the consent finally. But until then, it's not going to happen. So we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. Educate them. If we require an education by every person who runs for any office, including the dog catcher, run for office, including the dog catcher, right up to the President of the United States, if they do not know the Constitution, we need to require that they know it before we even consider putting them on the ballots. We the people consent to our government also by putting good statesmen, potential statesmen on the ballots. Statesmen who knows the Constitution, has been educated. And again, you know, we're going to push to our requirement of government by consent course by anyone once we work into the political realms and work through the states. You know, for the people to take control at the committee man level, then we can push a requirement for them to take our course. And I'll tell you what, I've seen courses and I've been through some courses on the Constitution and different things. They bored me to tears, most of which I never even completed. The best course in the Constitution I ever took was the one that I went in to do just by searching and looking for the sources of conclusions offered. And finding it myself, point by point, going back and listening to the conversations, and the arguments back in the beginning, you know, the Federalist Papers, the Anti-Federalist Papers. And so that's what the people have to do. So the course that we're given and the book that we're writing has sources, lots and lots of sources. So anything we say, we have the source on where to find out where that came from, how we came to that conclusion, and you can trace that out, and then you've done your homework. Anybody who goes that far into it and does that, by the time they get to the end, they'll be very well-versed in the law, very well-versed in the political process, the judicial process, how American, you know, history, very well-versed. So the more time you spend with something, the more the better you'll be. And the best way is to go right down the rabbit hole, okay? Find each rabbit hole and go down them to the bottom. I know rabbit hole is usually put towards a negative, but maybe we could think of a better word. But you got to dig deep. Okay, I see Gerard's here. You ready to take the board, Gerard? Hello. Are you muted, Gerard? And I guess we'll call on him when we finish up. Okay, we're going to move over to Brent. Brent's going to talk to us for a while, and then after that, we're going to open up the queue for questions. Brent? Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent? You got the mic.
Thank you, John. Here, this is Brent Allen Winters, commonlawyer.com, www.commonlawyer.com. My comments are my own. Nobody else is just me, and I appreciate the opportunity, as always, to say a few words. We're talking about the Constitution of the United States. We're working through it clause by clause and blow by blow, and we're up getting close to the end of Article 1. Article 1 is about Congress. And we are up to the point we're talking about habeas corpus, going on the theory that he who never quotes is never quoted. I'm going to quote somebody here. This is Justice Joseph Story. In all of our history, of our common law history, there are two persons that stand out as much as anybody else, and probably more so. And those two persons are Edward Coke, C-O-K-E. The British call him Cook, but for us Americans, we think things go better with Coke, so we say Coke, I suppose. But our Constitution of the United States is a common law document. It's not possible to understand our Constitution without letting the common law inform it. It has to give it definition. The words aren't defined. It's a brief. It doesn't explain anything. It just throws it out there with a lot of terms of legal significance. Listen to what Justice Story says. It's about habeas corpus and about how to interpret the Constitution. He says, in order to understand the meaning of the terms used here, he's talking about the habeas corpus clause. We're going to read it here in a minute. In order to understand these terms, it will be necessary to have recourse to the common law. For in no other way can we arrive at the true definition of the writs of habeas corpus. It is justly esteemed the bulwark of personal liberty. He says the writs of habeas corpus are justly esteemed the bulwark of personal liberty, applied in every case of illegal restraint. We call it today probably false imprisonment. Whatever, he says, whatever it may be, for every restraint upon a man's liberty is, in the eyes of the law, an imprisonment. Let me say that again. Every restraint upon a man's liberty is, in the eyes of the law, an imprisonment. Wherever may be the place, or whatever may be the manner in which the restraint is effected, if somebody takes a piece of chalk and draws a circle on the pavement and tells you to stand inside of it, and until you get out of it, they're going to knock you flatter than a flitter. I don't care whether it's your neighbor, your brother, a police officer, a judge, that's an imprisonment. That fits this definition. This definition is the definition our law, our common law applies, and that's the definition that's applied in most every state. And by the way, that's called also arrest. Imprisonment and arrest are fundamentally the same thing. You're restrained. You can't go where you want to go. Liberty is sometimes defined fundamentally. William Blackstone defines liberty fundamentally as the freedom of locomotion. Freedom of locomotion. The freedom to get up and go where you want to go when you want to do it. To go get yourself a cup of coffee, to drive down to the grocery store, to jump in your car upon a moment's notice and drive to a neighboring state or walk. That's called freedom of liberty. And by the way, that goes for going to other countries, too, and that's been taken away from us largely here in America. They've made it a major ordeal just across the border. And I know that that's a more complicated question because of the people coming in, but nonetheless, there hasn't been that long ago that nobody needed a passport to go to another country. If you wanted to go, you just bought a ticket and left. That was freedom. It didn't hurt us. We had it pretty good at that time, and I don't know that we feel as good now that we have all these restraints of liberty. That's what liberty is fundamentally. One other word to drop a footnote. Freedom of locomotion doesn't define the word freedom. That's what liberty is. That's the Latin word for freedom. Freedom and liberty are the same words or the same meaning fundamentally. But to go a little deeper, what is freedom? And like a lot of fundamental concepts of legal significance, the history of the etymology of the word gives you a strong indication, and especially in this case of freedom. Freedom is a compounding of two Anglo-Saxon words. That's from the Germanic languages. Freedom, there's the word free, and the word dom. Dom, we still have the word in English today. We say doom, D-O-O-M. If we say someone is doomed, that means that they're irreversibly in trouble. You're doomed. It's a very heavy word, doom. Well, they used to say dom, D-O-M. They didn't spell things back in those days. They spoke them mostly. So dom, doom, dumb. They said it all sorts of different ways. Same word. We say doom today. But free means free. It just means to have no restraints. But freedom is different than just having no restraints because you add the doom on the end. Freedom, listen to me close. In our understanding and our language, and it's a good definition, freedom is to be free from doom. That's the ultimate freedom. And there again, we see the Christian idea expressed in our fundamental words, because that's what Christianity is, freedom from doom. The gospel message is that a man is free from the judgment of God because the Savior of the world, Jesus Christ, took the judgment upon himself. So God's not a chiseler. He doesn't make you pay too. There is no purgatory for the Christian man. There is no judgment. There is nothing left except blessings of the law. The dooms of the law have been taken away. Well, that's what freedom is. And that's why Jesus Christ said, if the Son make you free, you're free indeed. Free of what? Free of doom. You're free of judgment. It's not going to come against you. And freedom ultimately is understood rightly that way. Because if you're free from doom, your conscience is free, the guilt is taken away, and you're really free. You can up and run at that point, not worry about making a mistake even, as we all do. Well, that's what the meaning of arrest is, false imprisonment. And habeas corpus was an act of Parliament. People say the common law is not statute law. Well, I'm not sure what everybody means when they say that, but our common law is sometimes expressed in statutes. You see, a legislator and the legislature has just as much a responsibility to speak the truth as do the judges and the juries. Indeed, everybody has a responsibility to speak the truth and the truth of what is right and what is wrong. What is law, in other words? The will of the sovereign is law. And we all have a duty to express it and protect it. Now, habeas corpus was the brainchild of the Parliament in England. Every state legislature in America has also passed a form of habeas corpus. Our Constitution of the United States guarantees the writ of habeas corpus. Our common law has always called it, since its passing by the Parliament in Britain, has always called it the great writ. It's the greatest writ, because as long as habeas corpus is in place, we have the possibility of freedom. If it's not in place, everybody's liable to be jailed without cause forever, as goes on in most of the world today. There's no real law against it in the countries where the law of the city prevails, this Code of Justinian, the Roman law, the Roman and canon laws, as the universities still put it. So this writ of habeas corpus was put in place. Why was it put in place? Why did Parliament come up with this idea? And it really was an idea that they fashioned, trying to find a way to prevent government from falsely imprisoning people without just cause. One more thing you could say about this, but why is that important? Why is it important? Why does our common law say it's important that men be not falsely imprisoned? Why doesn't the rest of the world say that? Why doesn't the Roman system say that? They don't. You have to ask yourself why. And again, it comes back to the revelation that Blackstone identifies as the laws of nature's God, or Declaration of 76 puts it that way. It comes back to the Bible. And it comes back to the fundamental law of God. And it comes back then to what the maker of heaven and earth told our grandpa, Adam. He said, be fruitful, multiply, That's one thing. But the second thing he said was, fill, spread out across the faces of the earth. You can't spread out across the faces of the earth. The government has the power to confine you within the borders of your country, or confine you within the borders of your state, or hinder your ability to travel. That is contrary. That's flying in the face of God himself. And if you'll go back and maybe remember the encounter at the place called Babel in Genesis chapter 11, they tried together. He tried the Nimrod, the emperor of the city of Babylon, built a big edifice, a ziggurat, the archaeologists call it. They're all over the world. We have them even here in North America. False worship. And this built this tower, the old translations call it. And to draw all men into one place and hold them there. That's false imprisonment. But listen, the powers that be don't care how they imprison you falsely. They could put up a wall and say you can't leave. They could put a gun to your head and say you can't leave. They could chain you to a tree, as they used to do out west. I lived in a town out in Arizona that has a jail tree. They didn't have a jail. They just chained people to the tree till they could get them to trial. That's false imprisonment if it's not according to due process of law. But anyway, they don't care how they do it. They can jail you, chain. They can persuade you by religious, false religious doctrines, you can't go anywhere. Stay here. If you leave this area, you'll be killed. I don't know what they'll say. Or if you leave this area, you're disobeying God. That's what they said at Babel, essentially. God says no. And that is why false imprisonment is such a big deal in our common law. And that is why habeas corpus is such a big deal. Before Congress passed the Habeas Corpus Act, our common law tried to prevent people from being falsely imprisoned this way. They had a system in England, and what they did was they required the judges and justices of England to examine every prisoner in jail every quarter of the year, every 3 months, examine the prisoner in his case and determine whether or not he was being imprisoned falsely or rightly. Well, it worked pretty good, and that wasn't on request. That was something that they did to everybody, but it got so overwhelmingly burdensome because the roads were mud. They didn't have paved roads, and the justices couldn't travel, the judges, very easily or quickly. And there were jails all over the country in every little county and every little hundred, as they called them, the old townships. And so Parliament finally said, well, we're getting too big. We can't do this anymore. And they came up with this thing called the writ of habeas corpus. Well, what is it? Well, writ's a command in writing from a greater to a lesser, or for somebody that has authority to somebody that's obliged to obey that authority. That's fundamentally what it is. Let me read what our Constitution of the United States says, if I haven't lost it. Maybe I did. No, here it is. Section 9, Clause 2 of Article 1. It says this, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion the public safety may require it. Let me read it again. You may not know what habeas corpus is yet, but you know it's important. We talked about that. Listen to the simplicity of these words. The privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion or invasion, the public safety require it. Now, the writ of habeas corpus is our great weapon against false jailing, available only in common law countries. Only common law countries. And there are only about five in the world, so that means that you get thrown in jail in most places and you may not see daylight. They might forget about you. Even in the country called Scotland, though part of the United Kingdom, yet being under the Roman law in many of its forms, does not enjoy the writ of habeas corpus, unless Parliament recently has passed legislation. I don't follow what Parliament does, but in the not-too-distant past, I know that was true. Habeas corpus is a written court order commanding officials and jailers, indeed commanding anyone, any government or non-government person, even a hospital. Maybe a hospital is not letting somebody be discharged. Well, that's true. That's false imprisonment. If it's not according to law, most times isn't, the writ of habeas corpus applies. it holds captive another to bring that person, or holding captive. What it does, it commands the jailer to bring the person that's being jailed, to bring the person's body, that's the word corpus, habeas, corpus, that means that you got part of the Latin there, habeas, and then body. Habeas, by the way, means we have. Corpus means body. Habeas corpus means we have the body. We have produced the body of the prisoner. It's important to understand it that way. You got to bring the body of the prisoner before the court. A habeas corpus proceeding is not lawful in the absence of the prisoner. In other words, a lawyer can't go into court and argue the habeas corpus for the habeas corpus writ and his client, the prisoner, sitting in jail. Why is that? Well, for this reason. Because if the judge determines that he's being jailed illegally, he's in the judge's control, and the judge can command him released on the spot. And if he's in the jail, well, then they'll say things like, well, we've got to process him out. That'll take a day and a half. Then we've got to give him a physical. We've got to wait till the doctor gets here. That'll take another day. We've got to get his paperwork in order and get it typed up. That'll take another day or two. And that's not what this is for. This is for immediate release if the judge determines that his jailing is unlawful. So if the jailing power gives no lawful reason for the jailing the prisoner, he's freed on the spot. Our common law tradition holds this writ of habeas corpus to be the first and greatest weapon of personal freedom, the common law having upheld it for ages before Parliament by statute confirmed it. It was a good idea. The writ of habeas corpus by which the authority under which a person may be detained can be challenged is of immemorial antiquity. After a checkered career, I'm quoting a legal treatise on the subject by a fellow named Wright, after a checkered career in which it was involved in the struggles between the common law courts and the courts of Chancery and the Star Chamber, as well as in the conflicts between Parliament and the Crown, the protection of the writ was firmly written into English law. In other words, Parliament put into statute what the courts had already recognized. It was as though it was a recognition. But it's nice to have it in a statute, as I said a while ago. Because the power of habeas corpus writ to keep a country free is immeasurable, it alone is called the Great Writ. Rooted in olden times, to understand it requires, says Justice Joseph Story of our Supreme Court, requires recourse to our common law. The Great Writ's modern use first came to light during the civil canon law tribunal's attacks on the common law freedoms during the Reformation in England. You see, in England, what we call in America equity courts, in England, those arose as Roman church courts. Those were the Pope's courts. And that was a separate jurisdiction. And then, of course, after Henry VIII threw the Roman church out of England and decided he'd be the Pope in England, then they were still the church courts, and they operated by the same brutal rules. In other words, the canon law of Rome still applied. Just had a different pope, you see. Well, that system then came to America. And, it was a long time coming. The Puritans hated Rome so much that when they got to New England, they didn't allow equity jurisdiction at all. From the time they came here in 1620, the first ones came, the Pilgrims, that was a sect of Puritans, until about 1873, I believe, in Massachusetts, they finally allowed equity. They saw that it had tamed down enough and Rome was fully removed and the Pope had no power over them. That's what they wanted to get away from. That's why they came to America. The Star Chamber and the High Commissions, priest judges, I forgot to add, the judges in the Roman courts and the church courts were priests. So they were doing, of course, the bidding of Rome. He was their master. He still is their master. And he's the absolute dictator of votaries of that religion. And they were jailing people that were Protestants. And they were doing it without due process. And they did it. They did brutal things. They cut out people's tongues and cut off their ears and branded them and cut off their noses even sometimes. If you looked at them a little funny or didn't have the proper tone of respect in your voice, you didn't want to be there. Well, we've come a long way in America. We're being stupid to let it slide and not understand these things. In response to all of that, there was a fellow by the name of Nicholas Fuller. He lived from 1543 to 1620. 1620 is a very important date in America. About the time the Puritans were just getting geared up to try to migrate. Well, Nicholas Fuller was a Puritan, and he was a barrister. That means he was a lawyer, and he practiced before the courts. And he was a student of Hebrew. He was a biblicist, very much so. And he defended, case by case in open court, his client's rights of individual conscience, advising them to demand their common law right to remain silent. See, our Constitution did not invent its principles and the amendments in it. These things are ancient from our common law back to Britain and England. And the right to remain silent being one of them, Nicholas Fuller, he advised the Protestants that were drugged before the Star Chamber and the High Commission Court of the priests to just remain silent. And for following Fuller's advice on this point, the Star Chamber and the High Commission's priests, judges, jailed Fuller's clients for contempt because they wouldn't talk. In response, Fuller appealed to the Common Law Court of the King's Bench for the writ of habeas corpus. And what he said was to the King's Bench, he said, listen, you have power over these church courts. They just haven't figured that out yet. And these Romanist priests, as they called them in those days, popelings, he said, you have power. You can stop this, and you can take control of these cases and take it out of their jurisdiction. That was, we do that today in our state and federal system. We have what we call removal, where you can just remove a court from a case from a state court to a federal court. And you don't have to ask permission. You don't make a motion. You just do it if you think the feds have jurisdiction. Well, that came from the removal that used to happen in Britain, removal from the equity courts, the church courts, the High Commission, the Romanist courts, to the courts of common law, the King's Bench. And Fuller said this. He said, my clients ought to be released from the High Commission Court, that's the Roman Court, because the High Commission has not been empowered by law to fine or imprison. And they hadn't. Parliament hadn't given that jurisdiction, but they were doing it. But they were doing worse than that. They were mutilating people's bodies. Indispensability to the civil canon law's devices of Inquisition, and that they don't have trials in Roman law countries, all of South America and Europe, and the communist countries or Roman law countries, they don't call it that, but it's the same judicial code, code of Justinian. In those countries, they don't have trials, they have inquisitions. Their system is what Rome used to call inquisitional. Our system is adversarial, our common law. We go into court and we have trial. We fight. Well, they don't do that in the rest of the world. You just go into court and do what the judge tells you. He's not a lawyer, an attorney. He's trained as a judge, and he works for the executive power of the government. And if he doesn't do what they want, they get rid of him and get another one. I'm talking a while ago about impeachment. Here, we have power of impeachment. We can get rid of judges, but it's not the government that gets rid of them. It's us. And we have to do it through our elected representatives, push them to do it. Well, indispensable to the canon and civil law's devices of Inquisition is the power to hold the target of its investigation under arrest in order to wear him down, discourage him, subdue him into conformity with the will of the state. Jailing a suspect or a potential witness for long spells of time under hard and humiliating conditions. By the way, there's no such thing as jailing without hard and humiliating conditions. Why? Because the most precious of rights is taken away from you. Freedom of locomotion. You are under arrest. You're jailed. And if you've not been jailed, you can't really imagine what it's like. It's misery beyond anything. It's the most there's not words to describe it, even for short periods of time. That's why the writ of habeas corpus is in place, and that's why it's so incredibly important. Why is it so miserable to be jailed? I'll tell you why. Because our Maker has put it in us to get up and go on impulse. And when we can't do that, and we know we can't do that, we know that the drive, the energy that God is, the want, the desire that God has put into us is being suppressed. And we know we're not whole. We know there's something wrong. We feel like a caged animal, thus the expression, caged animal. I saw a fellow last night that kind of tickled me, speaking of caged animals. Where I'm staying, I heard the awfulest racket. Bang, bang, bang. I went outside, finally went up to where I knew it was coming from. It was from the deck above. And I looked out, and there was a coon trap to trap raccoons. And a pretty big trap. The coon can go in, but then the door shuts, and he can't get out. So I went up. He was in there, big coon. He must have weighed 40 pounds. But a coon doesn't give up, and he was trying to get out, and he was rattling that cage, trying to figure out how to turn it over, do something. And I thought, well, the fellow that put the coon, I knew who he was, and I said, he'll see it in the morning. Well, I got up then. That was just before daylight. I got up later and went out there, and the coon was gone. And later on, I told him, I said, there was a coon in that trap. He said, there was? I said, yeah, didn't you hear him banging around? He said, no. He said, well, if the coon was in the trap, how'd he get out? I said, I don't know. You know your trap better than I did. He knew where he got it. He said, it's impossible. I've been trapping coons for years. I've never had a coon get out of that trap. And we got to looking, picked the trap up. It's a pretty big contraption. Examined it, and that coon, there were latches when that door came shut, and they latched to where they were clipped tight, and there was no way I could have pried them off with my fingers. That coon got his teeth. I saw him working with his teeth when I saw him. He got his teeth down there, worked those off, and opened the door and left. I'm always for the guy that's down. I was glad to see him get away in that case, but just made me realize how smart they are, too. But wild animals don't like to be caged because they know God made them to do otherwise. They can't do what God made them to do. If they're caged up, they want to get out and move. Well, how much have I got to go here? Quite a bit. I think what I'll do is stop here, and I can pick it up next time. I'm going to spend a little more time on habeas corpus. When I first was invited by the folks at NLA to say a few words, they were doing a lot with habeas corpus, and so some of you remember that. I'm talking more about the history of it, and I can make some comments about the way it's used today. It's being hindered today, especially in the federal courts. They put a time limit on it, believe it or not. Now, that's unconstitutional in my view and opinion, but nothing's been said about it, and I don't know that it's been challenged. We'll continue with this, though. The writ of habeas corpus, it is the great writ. Thank you for listening, and thank you for allowing me to talk, Gerard, and John, and back to you, Gerard, if you're there.
Okay, thanks, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay. So the queue is full, and we'll start off with the first caller. I don't see a name. I see 2219. I'm going to go ahead and open up that caller.
I see 770, I guess. Is that what you got now?
No.
Gerard? It looks like, who is it? We just lost that one. Yes. I don't know. Anyway. Looks like Sally from PA.
Yes, hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Sally.
Oh, good. You can hear me. Wonderful. I tried to call and talk to you last week. But I guess I was one of the last people when you were done at 12:45, so I didn't get a chance to speak to you. It's wonderful that you've been talking tonight about making them proof jurisdiction, because I've been going through the courts and I've been having a horrible time. The first time I went a little over a month ago, I asked to see the... This is traffic court for code. I asked to see the administrator, whatever you want to call him, the magistrate. I asked to see his oath of office. He said, no, that doesn't matter. And he said, if she didn't get an inspected, he said to one of the two officers that was in there, he said, she's guilty. And I asked one more time, I require to see your oath of office, and I want to know if you're going to honor your oath of office. And he said, that's it, I'm going to hold you in contempt. And if you say anything else, and he said, that's it, get her out of here. And he found out I was taping because the cop said, you know, she's recording. So he said, quick, take that from her. So they took it away from me. And he marked down for my fine. He marked that I was guilty, but he marked that I owed 0.00 because that was actually treason. The second time I went to court, which was about a week ago, and that was in front of another magistrate because they keep getting me for this so-called expired inspection sticker, $250 a pop. So I went into there, and now I didn't know anything about common law, and it's funny, John, that you were speaking about common law tonight. I'm 51 years old, and I never even knew that existed until I had all these problems. Which started, you know, quite a few months ago, and all over this stupid inspection sticker, quote unquote, which really doesn't even exist. You would think I killed somebody. Anyway, so I went into her court to this magistrate, and I asked to see, and I wanted to tell you too, what they do here in Pennsylvania too, is there is no prosecutor, the judge, if that's what you want to call them, they actually prosecute the case and then make the decision. So I brought that up, and first of all, I challenged her jurisdiction. First, I asked to see her oath of office, and she started calling me, oh, nobody is asked to see this. I don't see why you have to see this in the whole 18 years that I've been here. Then she started calling me mental. No one in my life has called me mental, and I pretty much have been studying nonstop for quite a few months now. So I pretty much know common law, and I have pretty well of a knowing and the confidence once I'm in there. So anyway, this was my second time around. She started swearing in the officer. I said, you don't have jurisdiction. I said, where is the injured party? She said, it's the state. I said, the state can't be the injured party. It has to be a flesh and blood man or woman. I said, where is Mr. or Mrs. State? She totally ignored me. She kept going on. She kept calling me mental. I mean, it's just ridiculous. There is no, how can I put this? There's no rights in these courts. And I'm wondering, now I have probably about 8 more to go to. And I wish I would have known this months ago when I started studying, but I just found out recently that I can actually go in there, and I don't know how to say it yet, but I will learn how to say it because I have to go in 2 days. But I can actually have them use the bond that they took out for me to pay this and just say, oh, yes, you know, something like I agree or whatever. And then have them do that. Now, the fines that I have already got, like from this magistrate from a week ago, I can actually go in there and pay with pesos, which I went to the bank and found out to get $150 of pesos is $7. It's $7 in our money. So I found out I could do that, but I mean, I'm getting really nailed and hammered. I mean, it's just absolutely ridiculous. People who kill people have less problems, and they don't care. They just keep going along. They don't listen to me. I don't know if I should stop going to the traffic court, but I heard if I stop going once I've already agreed to go, I've already made a hearing, which I didn't know. The funny thing is I've been watching a whole bunch of people on YouTube and this and that, and where you were saying, John, where we show you how to do, where we show you how to do the paperwork, it's funny because I can't figure any of that stuff out, how to do the paperwork. It is everything's just difficult when it comes to that. But I'm really getting hammered, and I'm just thinking maybe I shouldn't go to these, but I guess I have to. I have to go to these hearings. So anyway, that was it. And also, I wanted to say too, I would like to sue, and I'm looking for somebody who would maybe help me, and I would also share the bond if anyone knows how to do that, because the first time I went where that guy actually did treason, I got really angry, and I guess I have a temper, even though it's held under control. But when we were walking out, the cop was laughing at me, and I called him an arm thug and a piece of garbage. So he harassed me out in the parking lot. He got in his car, harassed me, and then he told me that the minute that I pull out of the parking lot that he was going to pull me over, and he did. And I taped all that. I have it all on tape. So with him pulling me over, so I'd like to sue him. I'm pretty sure I can. I'm pretty sure I can sue him in his public capacity, and I'm pretty sure I can sue him in his private capacity. So I would like to do that. Of course, I could definitely bring charges against that magistrate too for treason. But I'll stop talking.
Yeah, but you're going to want to be careful if you try to do something like that, to sue him in two different capacities. Remember, once he steps outside of his authority, he's no longer in his official capacity. And once you sue his official capacity, now you're going to have to fight the whole state, and they're going to tell you you can't sue us, and there's a procedure and a process and blah, blah, blah. Go on and on and on. But look, here's the problem. You know, there is some good information out there on the Internet. A lot of this stuff is poison, unfortunately. You know, the man on the land stuff, a lot of it is just nothing but poison. They got their ideas and what's going on, they understand. I mean, you know, this whole thing is a fraud. It all goes back even beyond the 1871 Organic Act is when really they started to do the construction of law on this whole process. And I'm sure there were other things before that, but that was the pinnacle, the beginning of creating a city within a nation within a city within a city. And then from there, they started to construct this whole thing of really, really that enslaves us, kind of moving corporate law or whatever you want to call it, and particularly the law of the sea upon the people. And that's what they did in U.S. 18 with the penal code. In U.S. 18, if you go look at it, the jurisdiction is clear. It's law of the sea. It's maritime law. So they got the wrong jurisdiction. You can challenge that jurisdiction. But look at what we did a long time ago.
I do. They don't listen. They do not. They don't care. There's nobody recording, and they don't care.
I'm trying to tell you how you can get beyond the argument. Okay.
Okay.
Let me just give you a little bit of an example. Gerard, when we went into court fighting a lot of the cases early on, especially in the town courts, and we went with some people, I think some of those courts were in for like over 9 months, and every time you're going back trying to challenge that jurisdiction, and it just went on and on and on. Would you say we were 9 months and more in some of these courts? I think with Dave up there out there.
Yeah,
Dave out there in, Niagara County, I know he's been in court for a long time fighting the same thing, and the judge, and they try to do all kinds of crazy things to you. Look, here's the key. If you're really going to challenge, particularly, let's say, traffic violation, okay, if you're going to challenge it, you got to ask yourself how far you're willing to go. Okay, at some point it doesn't become, affordable. When you look at the time and the money you'd have to give them and the time you're going to lose, maybe it's cheaper to pay the fine, but maybe not. Again, it's up to the individual. But of course, if it gets a little more serious than that, where there's potential jail time, you definitely want to defend yourself and win that court. When you get into court, you know, we wrote a paper, and it's up there online right now. As a matter of fact, we mentioned it a little earlier. Earlier on this evening, if you go up to our website, and you highlight let me see, members, come down to court forms, click on court forms, and here are the instructions and the forms to challenge jurisdiction, okay? Don't go into court and challenge jurisdiction verbally, okay? You know, if you read our paper and, you know, if you do go to court before you even have a chance to file the paper, maybe they take you straight into the court or something. Usually when you get a ticket, you know, you're like 20, 30 days away, and you can even push that further away. You can make some dumb excuse and you know, a week or a few days before the court and you're really sick or whatever the case may be, make a you know, an excuse and get more time. And you might want to do that. The plan really is to get yourself 30 days. But as soon as you get your ticket and you want to challenge it, the next day, right away, you need to write a paper. And you need to, you know, I'll just read the first paragraph, which is how we kind of couch this. And for challenging the jurisdiction, okay? You write a paper saying that you give them the name and you're one of the people of whatever state you're in. You're competent to defend yourself in this court of law. You want to refer to it as a court of law. Here and after petitioner, because you want to become now a petitioner, and you're here by special appearance. That's key. You're not giving this court any authority. Even though you're speaking to them, you're here to test that court. You're here by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the above said court. Anyway, you start off with this paper, and we did write it. You can pretty much use this for any case, you know, because a case of challenging the jurisdiction, the case itself is irrelevant. You're saying this court doesn't have jurisdiction to hear this case. They don't have personam jurisdiction. They don't have jurisdiction over you, the person, okay? Now, again, we used to do this verbally. We've had judges say, well, okay, I'll take a ruling on that. I rule. I got jurisdiction. Let's move on. I mean, that's how bold they are. The United States Supreme Court.
Oh, you're not kidding.
Yeah. The United States Supreme Court, I'm giving you the whole picture here, then I'll let you talk again.
Right.
The United States Supreme Court has ruled, okay, concerning jurisdiction once challenged, must be decided. The word decided means there needs to be a hearing concerning it. And if that judge is in a court that doesn't have jurisdiction, clearly you can't let that judge make a decision on that. Okay, see, that judge has got to step aside, recuse himself, and another judge has to come in. And I would think that really I would push towards minimum a county judge. Most county courts are courts of record. And remember, courts of records are established courts. All the federal district courts are courts of record. It says so in the code. All county courts, all state courts are courts of record. It says so in the code. It says so in the Constitution and here in New York. Okay, that's what it says. They're courts of record. They have a secondary process to it. They can also hear courts of equity. And that's what you're in, is in a court of equity. In this case, it's what's called a nisi prius court. It's an administrative court. It has no power to fine or incarcerate, yet they do. How do they get away with that? Because
mm-hmm.
we're so
right.
We're dumb. We're slaves. We're ignorant. The ignorant
mm-hmm.
slaves are going to continue to pay and enslave, be enslaved forever. You're not going to get out of it until you can learn to read, until you can learn the process, the procedure, and what the real law is, and how to turn things around against them. Okay, so you're in this court. It's a court that's an administrative court. It has to be moved up minimum to the county level, which would be a court of record. You can let the judge make a decision. That's fine. If he makes the wrong decision, you keep moving it along. You'll challenge the, you'll go to the next challenge. Once you challenge once you challenge and fail at receiving your what's right, which is you're challenging the jurisdiction, and you need to be released from that court. That's what's right, okay? Because these courts cannot proceed without your consent. And they also know this because they do everything they can to plead. You know, you don't want to plead innocent, you don't want to plead guilty, you can plead no contest. But they want to get a plea out of you. You cannot plea. You need to you know, say, first of all, when
yeah,
they ask
I
for
didn't,
a plea.
Yeah, I didn't enter a contract with her, and she still kept calling me mental so that she could get me to be awarded the court. She told me to sit down. I ignored it. She kept trying to enter contract with me.
Hold on a minute. I'm trying to tell you why it went that way and how you can stop it from going that way. Okay?
Right.
This is the important thing. You need to try to keep yourself out of the court for 30 days. The reason why you want to try to keep yourself out of the court for 30 days is because you want to get them to default on a paper that you write. Don't go in and make the argument. Put your argument on paper. And any kind of a thing you have to extend, if you get yourself in court and if you feel you have to extend your position or something, don't make that position in court. You tell the judge, I object to this situation or I object to that, and I'm going to go back and study and I'm going to respond in writing. Respond in writing. Everything you do is in writing. Once you do it in writing and then you walk into that court and you say something different, that rules the rest of the court. You just nullified what you wrote. So you've got to be very careful not to talk. And here you're here for special appearance, and I will respond in writing, I object to this. I'll respond in writing of my objection or so. And you don't even have to tell them that. You just, after you object, you then can write your paper and send it in. But look, it, you're not going to stay in that court. That's the whole point. There's one way you can get out. Well, actually, it may take two steps to get out of it. Step number one, you have to challenge the jurisdiction. You do that by writing a paper and making excuses to try to stay out of the court for 30 days so they default. Step number two, you file it with the court, but you address the prosecutor. The prosecutor is the one that has to respond to your objection to the jurisdiction. I will tell
you.
They're
not having any prosecutors in these courts. It's all the magistrates.
Yeah, look, I understand that, and I'm going to. They do have prosecutors, and they're special prosecutors, which is not lawful. I went through this thing. I went up to the. You know, I've done this already. I've been into the town court, website. They do give a prosecutor's name there, but they don't give the traffic court prosecutor's name. But it doesn't matter. Every court, I don't care whether it's town, whether it's village, whether it's city, or whether it, no matter what it is, you will find that they have a prosecutor because they do hear, quote-unquote, criminal cases, okay? And so whenever there's a criminal case, you're definitely going to see a prosecutor. Here in New York, you're going to see a prosecutor every time, but you'll see the traffic prosecutor. So what I did, because I couldn't find the name and no one could give me the name of the prosecutor, and I called the court and they wouldn't give me the name of the traffic court prosecutor. So what I did is I took the county cop prosecutor who is responsible for any court in the county, right down to the state and level and so on, and I wrote my paper and addressed it to that person. And now they are now obligated to push that paper along to the proper person. So once you've notified the prosecutor of the county concerning this case, okay, now you've already made notification. Now they have 30 days, because after 30 days, if they're silent for 30 days, they now have defaulted. They acquiesce. They have defaulted. The next paper you file after that is an affidavit of default. You take it down to the county clerk, and you file it with the county clerk if you can. They probably won't take it. They'll probably tell you to go to the town court. So most likely you have to go down there. They will reject it. So what you do is I wouldn't even go down to file it. I would mail it in certified with and do an affidavit of service on that certification of that affidavit of default, give them an extra copy, plus give them a self-addressed mail envelope, okay, and feed this, put it into the court through the mail. If they reject it, you got all the proof that you filed it. They now, that clerk is guilty of not concealment, but removal, okay, because anything that is prima facie, they're not a judge. They cannot arbitrate anything. They have to receive, stamp, file, and let the court process take it. Once they've intercepted that, they became guilty of something else. So now you have something else you might be able to use as a leverage. But here's the key, okay? You don't go into the court. You keep your mouth shut. And when you're in the court, and if you have to go into court, you keep your mouth shut. You say, I need to get counsel. Don't say a lawyer. Just counsel. I need counsel. I need some time for counsel. How much time do you need? Well, I'd like to have a month. Okay, maybe it's been 15 days and he only gives you 2 or 3 weeks, and that's fine, as long as you get past that 30 days from when you wrote that paper. And then when that paper is written, what happened with me is they sent it from the county prosecutor, wrote me a letter back. Now, he didn't return the paperwork. He forwarded it, okay? And so he wrote me a letter back saying that he doesn't prosecute the traffic court, in a traffic court. And he forwarded the paperwork to the other person, the prosecutor who takes care of that. Now, all that is illegal. There's no law, there's no statutes or anything giving them the authority to do any of those things, at least that I'm not aware of. And so now it's...
They have to be in the court, though, when you're there, right?
Listen, I know I'm going on long on this. I'm trying to give you the whole picture, and I'll give you the place where to get the paperwork, and then you can ask the questions. But look, what happened with me, just to finish that story off, is it went to the traffic court prosecutor, which we have in New York now. They used to not have that. That's only been around for about a year or so. That person got it, okay? They didn't even respond to it, okay, to be honest with you. I just got the letter from the other prosecutor telling me to forward it over. So anyway, I sent the copy again anyway to make sure that they did have it, counted my 30 days. Okay, I was kind of lucky because we had a bad snowstorm and I didn't have to go into the court, which pushed me over the 30-day point at that point. But if I would have called in sick if we didn't have that snowstorm. I was too sick, I couldn't come out, and they'd give you another date. But get past that 30 days. Once you get past the 30 days, you file the affidavit of default. Now you tell them they got a cease and desist, you defaulted. They'll try to make an argument, and now you can move it. If you have to, if they're not going to accept that, you can then move it into federal court for cause, okay? Violation your right of due process. Now, I'm thinking about maybe doing a state level first and then the federal. I'm kind of been ruling against that, and at this point I'm still kind of ruling against that. But I have a few more things I want to look at before I make my final thoughts, my final conclusion, to go straight to federal court. Once you move it into federal court for cause, saying they don't have, they're not giving you due process, therefore, you know, they have to cease and desist or give you due process. They're incapable of giving you due process, so they have to cease and desist. They can't respond to that court saying, well, this is what we're going to do to give due process, because they're a court not of the jurisdiction that you would belong into to begin with, and applying things that the state would never prosecute you on, or even the county wouldn't prosecute you on. These things are all prosecuted on the lower level, the village level, the village level, the town level, or the city level. Never on the county level, never on the state level. They will not hear these. They won't even address these cases. That's how you may be able to beat this. And you should be able to beat it if you have to go to the second part of the process, which is moving into federal court for cause. Now, I just filed these papers up on our website, or posted, shall I say, under members, come down to court forms, and you'll see instructions and forms to challenge jurisdiction. And you'll also see instructions to move your case for cause. I should put instructions and form to move your case for cause, and I'll get that up by next week, I think. But the other one is already up there. If anybody wants to challenge jurisdiction in a village or town court or one of those lower courts, now if you go into court and you start talking about they don't have authority, you want to see their oaths and their bonds and all that stuff, which you have a right to do, but we already know how they're going to respond to that. We know it's not going to go nowhere. We know they're just going to inflame them to be more angry with you, to try to do something more to harm you in some way. Why put yourself in that jeopardy? Put them into a place where they're uncomfortable. Put them into a place where they don't know, because it's never been done to them. By defaulting them and moving into federal court, then they're not going to even know what to do. Yeah, they'll send a lawyer there. He won't have a clue on what to do. The bottom line is they're not giving you your due process, and that federal court has to protect your rights. And that's how you can beat it. I wouldn't go any – the furthest I've ever gone, okay, with the courts and on the – what do you call it – level is the right papers. Most of the courts, when I get a ticket or something, I never hear from again. Just falls away. But sometimes I do, so I'll just pay the fine. If I got the time, well, I could move it into federal court and make my case there. But I don't have the time for that. But if I did have the time, I would do that. All right? So that's how you could beat it. Anybody that tells you you go in there and you say certain statements and you click your heels together and you're going to be transported to freedom, it's not going to happen. We've tried it so many times. For years we did this, and it took us years to really realize that we were just, you know, just circling around doing the same thing over and over and over again. You know, it was like going into, what is that movie where it repeats over and over, Groundhog Day, you know? Yeah. That's what it was like to go into these courts. You never
They're
get out of them.
They're so smug, too, and so pleased with themselves. It's crazy. The cops sit there and laugh at you. The magistrate sits there and laughs at you. It's a big joke to them. Like, we can railroad her. Let's do it.
There's three ways to protect yourself, three ways that people need to understand. They're exercised under different situations. One of the things is to understand how to challenge jurisdiction and to do it safely without opening your mouth, number one. The other thing, of course, is how to file a habeas corpus if that's what you need to get out of that court, because now they've got to prove that they've got something on you. And again, they really don't usually. And of course, how to move your case into a federal court for cause. Those are the three most important things people need to know that'll give them a defense. But again, if you're in court, in any court, more than let's say 30, 40 days, you're doing something wrong. You shouldn't. You got to get out of that court. You can't be going in that circle, coming back every month, coming back and coming back and coming back.
Well, no, they wrote me so many citations. I have to keep going for each citation. It's not for one thing. It's for one thing many different times.
Look it. You win the case once, and you'll never have to do it again because they're not going to give you any more, at least not in that town. So
what happens if I do win it once? Can they keep giving you citations for an expired sticker over and over?
Yeah, but now you got to sue them then at that point. If you've gone and they've done it once and now they're doing the same thing over again, you move it to the next step up. You move it to federal court for cause right off the bat. You don't even challenge jurisdiction. Move it right in and go after them for violating your unalienable right of due process and harassment. And I'm sure you could think of a lot of other things. You could probably find a lot of things.
It is harassment. I mean, I got sick a year ago, 2 months before my car was supposed to be inspected. I mean, I went to bed one night, and I woke up with a debilitating disease. I live in my car. I'm homeless now. And, I mean, this is really freaking miserable to me. The fact of the matter is, if I wouldn't have got sick, I would have had my car inspected.
Sally, I understand that. And don't take this in the wrong way. But you're just telling a story. It's a good story, and you got good reasons behind your story. But they're not going to listen to it. Number one, and we don't even need to discuss those details. And you don't even need to give them any excuses. You need to stop them. And I just told you how to stop them. The question is, do you want to fight or do you want to win? That's the question. If you want to fight,
I want to win. I want to be such a pain in the butt to them that they'll leave me alone. That's what I want.
Listen, when you go into that court and you make an argument and you're fighting with people, then you're not there to win. You want to win, follow the process. Keep your mouth shut. Be there by special appearance to test the jurisdiction and put everything off as long as you can, saying, I need to seek counsel. And so I need 30 days. Okay, at that point, your first day in court, you well should have had that paperwork in. Okay, and I wouldn't even never... Look, there's no need to even go to traffic court. If you get your paperwork done very quickly and 2 or 3 days or a day before the court hearing, you call up and you ask them to reschedule you because you're sick, whatever you want to say. And they'll reschedule a couple of weeks down the road. You should surely pass your 30 days, and you should never even have to go in there and deal with these people. That's the way you win it. There's no other way. Sometimes you can get lucky and go in there and make the arguments that they give you online, you know, you see in all those videos and stuff. But they already, that cat's out of the bag. They already know that game. They can't win the one I'm telling you now, okay? Because you're taking the decision-making right away from them. You have jurisdiction. You can't rule in this case. You don't have jurisdiction. Well, I'm going to look and we're going to decide. No, you can't decide. It has to be decided by court of law. And you got to at least go up to the county level.
That's how stupid I am. I didn't even know I had to file paperwork about jurisdiction. I thought I could just tell them that they don't have jurisdiction to prove it when I went in there. I didn't even realize that.
Yeah. All right, well, look, none of that's going to work. And We're going to move on to our next caller, but that's how you beat it. And you try it, and we'll get the paperwork up there. Well, we got the paperwork up there for challenging jurisdiction. We're going to get it up there by next week, I'm sure, for moving it to federal court for cause. Or we may decide to do it state and then federal, but we'll see what we'll do by then. I'll think that out a little
what
more.
What about suing that cop? Do you think I can do that and that magistrate, or should I just leave that go?
I think you could do it because, you look, at if you're going to sue someone, if you're going to sue an individual that works for the government, you better know the system, and because, believe me, they'll throw you out under all kinds of technicalities. Do you know about Rule 12?
I don't know about rule anything.
You see, if you don't know about Rule 12, anybody who does not understand what Rule 12 is, I suggest to you strongly don't even try to go into a court to fight your own case, at least bringing up any kind of a claim against someone who works for government, I mean. Forget about it. Don't even try, because you're going to be thrown out quicker than you can go through the door. You'll be out faster, okay?
Is there anybody who would be willing to help me if I mean, I'm willing to I want to go after the insurance, and I'll share that.
I just told you can follow the instructions on the paperwork. It's all about filing papers. You'll never see a day in court. Why see a day in court? You file the papers, challenge jurisdiction. If they don't acknowledge that, the default, because they will default, you move it to federal court for cause. It's all paperwork. They're going to make a decision. Either they respond to that. If they don't respond to that, you default them in the federal court. You got your wherefore that you filed in the thing. And do you know what a wherefore clause is? It's called a wherefore clause. The wherefore clause is the end of your paperwork. This is what you're looking for the court to get from this court. You're asking the court for these things. Wherefore, these are the things that I want because I've been damaged and I need to be restored. Okay? And so you have to have a good wherefore clause. Look, we got paperwork that we put together called the anatomy of a court case. Okay? And it's the beginning of a court case, from the first filings of the papers all the way through the motions and the process of the paperwork before it goes to trial, if it's going to go to a trial. If it's going to be a court of law, it'll eventually go to a trial in front, or the other side will default. And they always will because, look, you'll be able to move the case to be thrown out because they have nothing, all right? And, again, you have to learn these things. It's not like it's a lot. Okay, it really isn't. Once you understand the structure and you see the procedure and the breakdown on how to write, and you get the forms, we're creating forms, okay? Most of these lawyers, they go to court, they have a book they go into, and they'll find a form to do this and a form to do that. They have the secretary type it up. They probably have that form in their computers already anyway. But anyway, it's there. They fill in the information, and they file the paperwork. They put in the unique information necessary inside that form, and they move on. So we're creating forms that are beneficial for the people to be able to exercise their rights in a court and move that court in order to get their rights acknowledged and to win in the court. And that's it. So you have to get, if you take our government by consent course, you'll have all the knowledge to do all those things. Because inside there we will have the anatomy of a court case, how to move a court, how to move a court into another court, you know, for cause, into the federal level, how to challenge jurisdiction, all those basic things, the simple things that give us the power and the authority to do what we have to do and push that court along. So take our course.
I'm trying to take the one, but it won't let me continue because I haven't finished the questions. And it needs the questions to be right for it. It won't let me even continue. I'm trying to take the courses I want to.
Well, that problem should have been fixed. And if it hasn't been fixed, give a call to Carl. There's information on our page that'll tell you who to bring your problem or your complaint to. You know, on our civics course, we have one person that handles most of that. And on our other course, we have someone else. But there's names and contact information. The most important course you could take is the government by consent course. Now, we have a constitutional course up there. It's very, very minimum. And it's something we put together kind of quick. It's not as in-depth as it really should be. We recently shut that one down. People in that course can continue to take it and finish it, but we're not allowing other people come into that course. The government by consent course has a big in-depth focus on the Constitution, of course, and so that's where you'll get your constitutional course in the government by consent course. But the civics course is also, you see, our civics course will give you a good understanding on how we got to where we're at, and you'll come to realize what we need to do to stop from getting back there again once we get past this, deep state problem and also the suit we have going in. Well, it's not a suit, really. We're filing papers on the United States Supreme Court, and we're doing it in a very unique way. We're coming in. Everything we're doing has been done before, but not the way we've done it. We're bringing things together that have never been brought together to apply.
I have to be honest with you. Until this stuff all started to happen, I had no idea even common law existed. All those years, half a century I've lived on this planet, and I had no idea how corrupt our courts and government is.
Slaves ignorant. They control our education. All right, let's move on to our next individual. If you want, you can get back into the queue. We've got to move on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Gerard?
Yeah, okay. Let me hit the next questioner here. And let's see.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead. Who is this, Culpepper?
Yeah, it is. I just wanted to mention a few things about an interesting experience I had with one of these so-called ethics committees. The situation was that my lawyer, who handled my criminal trial and basically, he was worthless, and he got run over by a Mack truck by the prosecutor and the judge. So I'm thinking about doing what they call a petition for declaratory judgment. But now that I've been listening to John earlier, I'm thinking about doing the writ of habeas corpus. And I was wondering, because I didn't actually do any time in jail, because they just basically wanted to steal my father's estate, if the writ of habeas corpus could be used on that type of situation.
Well, you could use a writ of habeas corpus on any of that. I mean, they have to show cause at that point. So that should get you out of that. You know what I mean? Where they got to produce, the evidence and the jurisdiction. So yeah, I think a writ of habeas corpus is probably a good place to go,
What court are you in?
Well, this happened in New Jersey. It was in
what court are you in?
I'm not in any court right now.
What court were you in?
I was in Superior Court, and then I appealed it to the Appellate Division, and I filed a petition with the Supreme Court, and they wiped their ass with it. And so, long story short, is all the judges were covering up for each other.
Did you get indicted?
Oh, yes, of course, yeah.
So you got indicted. What were you indicted for?
Yeah, terrorist threat, third degree.
What was that?
Terroristic threat.
What are they claiming you threat?
Well, the situation arises out of the fact that I was living in my father's house and he had passed away, and me and my sister were co-executors on the property, and we had several siblings, and she wanted to get me out of the house because she basically couldn't pay her bills, so she figured she would make up an allegation I had threatened her, and that way they would throw me out, which they did. And so, but the long story, what happened was she didn't realize was that once they got rid of me, they got rid of her. and they appointed...
Well, let me just tell you something that I hope everybody here listens. If the family can't get together and deal with their own personal problems, and when someone on the outside tries to stick their nose into it, if the family can't get together to put that person out of that, you know, that whoever it is that's sticking their nose in the court, the law, or whatever, okay, if you can't work it together as siblings in order to deal with that problem, you're going to have a bigger problem. And because if you're in one accord saying, keep out, this is our problem, we'll work it out, if you can't do that, then you're not going to be able to win them. But if you can do that and they continue to try to stick their nose into this system, into your situation, then you can follow certain processes. First of all, they don't have jurisdiction. You challenge the jurisdiction, you can do that. They certainly don't have the personam jurisdiction. You can, in the case where they file some claim against you, you could do a habeas corpus. Now that there's if there was a grand jury indictment on you, your only position that you could make, and you could win on this. I've never done it, but I know you can. I've thought about it before. The fact is that they are a statutory grand jury. You know, they are ruled by statute, so they don't have jurisdiction over you, and you can win on that level, okay? The court that you're going into, because they're going to deal with you in what's called criminal court. They're going to call it a criminal case. It's criminal court. They've separated into two divisions, civil and criminal. And the United States Supreme Court has helped us out on that, making the point that any court that calls themselves a civil court or a criminal court is not a court of record, but a court. It's kind of a quasi something, because it's combining a statutory process with what they're trying to do is what they're calling a court of law by raising up a jury that's controlled by statute. The whole thing's a mess. So you could probably make an argument and win that, okay? But and habeas corpus may be the way to go with the criminal thing, because now you got a problem with the indictment. So you're going to have to challenge the indictment from the standpoint that it's statutory. They're under control. Go get the book. They'll have a book there on how they handle their grand jury and a questionnaire. You go looking through that. I know on the federal level it's really terrible. Here in New York, on the New York level, it's pretty bad too. In some what I've seen anyway. But you know, depending on what the questions they ask and how the process goes, you know, you can use that as your evidence that it's statutory grand jury controlled by the prosecutor, and that the trial jury that you're going to be going into is controlled by statutes also, and therefore controlled by the judge. So you can make your argument. It'll be an uphill battle, but it's possible.
Well, that's interesting. Actually, I already got the grand jury manual, and I know that the prosecutor completely violated it. And get this, they actually indicted me without even an allegation against me. You know, the alleged victim never even appeared before the grand jury.
I don't understand. So what do you mean, no alleged? Say that again. I don't understand what you're saying.
Yeah. The alleged victim never appeared before the grand jury, yet I was indicted for making a terroristic threat to her life.
Well, I think you got a point there. You know, in other words, the prosecutor came in and talked to the grand jury and convinced them to indict without bringing any witnesses concerning the thing. I think you have a case there. You see, that makes the point. You're absolutely right. You know, you have a right to face the accuser. And even though you don't have a right to face your accuser under a grand jury, I just can't see how they can not have the witness come in to bear witness for the grand jury to make a decision. So that's really strange. Brent, you got any thoughts on that? Is Brent still here? Yeah, he looks like he's still here. You got any thoughts on that?
No, not particularly.
Right.
Not particularly.
It's a very strange thing. So I think you have you may be able to make an argument there.
Right. Well, the only witness that they brought in was the cop who arrested me, but he wasn't a witness to anything, you know. And basically they did that to taint the jury to think that if the cops think I was armed and dangerous, therefore the jury should think so, you know. But they never got into the into the actual alleged threat. In fact, I think what happened was my sister got cold feet. She never appeared. They didn't bother to subpoena her, and they just went ahead with the grand jury proceeding and indicted me.
Hmm. All right, well, anyway, that's something you got to look into things really to understand where you can make a position, what arguing you can make. Look, at the other thing is you get all the paperwork that they have on you and all the affidavits against you and so on and so forth, and if they really have nothing, you can move the court to dismiss the case.
Well, that's the other thing is that my sister committed perjury. Every time she said they asked her about the threat, she changed the room. It happened in the bedroom. It happened in the kitchen. It happened in the living room. So she.
Well, okay. So that's the evidence against you. Is her word saying this, that, or the other thing? And she contradicted herself, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, again, you could take that affidavit. Look, you have to take all the evidence against you. That affidavit is one piece of evidence. Maybe there's other pieces of evidence. So you start off with that. You push the court for a hearing, and you move to have the case thrown out, and you make your case, you know, on why it needs to be thrown out. Because, first of all, this witness is no good because of the contradictions right there. You know, this affidavit is null and void. Okay, so that's out of the way. Then you move to your next piece of evidence, and you got to do that with every piece of evidence. You got to show that, look, at this case needs to be dismissed because there's nothing here. You can request, it's what's called a summary judgment. Not that we agree with summary judgments, but I would leverage the court using that in the beginning of a case to try to get a case thrown out if I could do it. If I saw that it was that weak and could move for a summary judgment for dismissal, that's what I would do. I wouldn't allow anyone else. If I put a case in there and they tried to move a case for dismissal, well, look, if you don't have your evidence together and they can beat it up, each piece of evidence you have, they could beat it up pretty quickly, and they could have your case dismissed. So you got to really make sure that every piece of evidence is rock solid and it's certified and it'll stand up in court and it's not hearsay. So everything, that's what you have to make sure your case is. Their case is they need to be doing the same. They don't. Okay? And the other thing on that is not only do they don't do it, they'll rule whether they have it or not. And if you don't fight every tooth and nail, you know, remember, you could move every issue that's a problem, you know, without abusing the system, it's got to be valid, into a higher court for another decision, you know?
Yeah.
So, let's take this to understand how this works a little bit. If you're in a lower court that doesn't have jurisdiction over, and you challenge that court's jurisdiction, okay? You take it to the federal court to challenge the jurisdiction. You move it, it's called moving for cause, C-A-U-S-E. So you move it into the court for cause, and you challenge the jurisdiction. Now, they got to prove that they have jurisdiction in order to keep that case. Now, if they can show that they have jurisdiction, you got to go back down to that court and deal with whatever it is they got. But the problem is they don't have, well, the good news is they don't have jurisdiction. Okay, so you don't have to deal with that. So let's say they have jurisdiction, they send it back. Now you have another situation. Nothing is clearly, let's say it was a criminal case in a lower court and they didn't get a habeas, you know, they didn't get an indictment on you. Okay, a lot of people go to jail on those levels and with no indictment. They come in, they make a plea, so they don't need to indict you because you made a plea. Any court that asks you to make a plea like that, they're already looking ahead of the game, you know, if you haven't been indicted, that is, then they're looking to get that jurisdiction over you. But anyway, let's say you're sent back to the court, and then now you can make an argument and, again, challenge certain things, habeas corpus, okay? You've got to do the due process thing. But if you're going into the court in the first place and you're going to challenge jurisdiction, you might as well also challenge whatever you can that they're violating your right of due process, and everything else you can stick in there. But it's got to be a constitutional issue. Federal courts cannot hear your case. They're only dealing with the issue at hand. And if they don't have their jurisdiction, the upper court will order the lower court by writ cease and desist.
Okay, so, you know, in order to obtain jurisdiction, they have to have a grand jury proceeding that doesn't violate those rights.
Well, look at, you know, grand juries, they don't have to follow a certain procedure. The problem is that they don't even know any procedure, and they're brought by the nose by the, you know, by the prosecutor. So that's where you're looking where the, you know, the problem is that the prosecutor is controlling this. But look at, they don't have to hear everything. They only have to hear a little bit of what they believe would be something that they think, okay, yeah, a case should be taken. But I think there's a serious problem. If they have a witness and a prosecutor comes in and doesn't bring that witness in and articulates their thoughts about that witness and their position and thinking or whatever, even with an affidavit, I think that's a problem. If there's a witness, that witness needs to go before the grand jury, and the grand jury needs to question these people, and then they can make a good decision. So, again, on a case like that, I think you have a case, an argument you can make.
Good.
But anyway, with that, we got other people on the line.
Yeah, I'll wait for you to post that other stuff about it. So I appreciate the feedback. Thanks.
Right.
Okay. Let's go to the next questioner. Looks like
We only got about 15 minutes left, so we're going to have to try to shorten things up a bit so that we can try to get to everybody a little bit something. But go ahead, Linda.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yep.
Okay, I had some speakers plugged to my phone, so I'm not sure how this works. But, well, a lot of good conversations tonight, especially the lady with the traffic thing. Unfortunately, I think you said that was for town and I don't know, but not maybe counties or.
No, you can challenge jurisdiction in any court.
Can you use that form? That
of course.
Write-up?
It's a generic form for the purpose. You just put in your personal information into that form, and you file it, and you follow the procedure. There are three forms. Remember, if you're challenging jurisdiction, you're motioning. You're moving the court. That's a motion. Okay, so you have to have a paper concerning a motion. Okay, so you have
and
to
a hearing.
Huh?
And a hearing on it.
Well, you have a notice of motion. The hearing is by paper. Okay, and they got 30 days to respond. If you personally serve them, they got 20, but 30 days is what it is. Okay, so you have a notice of motion. That when you're trying to move a case, there are three different papers you need. You need the notice of motion, you need the challenge of the jurisdiction paper itself, and you need an affidavit of service. And as far as filing it in the court, you also need a cover sheet called a file on demand. Now, we have all that up there on our page, so... And just go through the instructions and fill in the papers and as needed and move the case along. And remember, the case will move as fast or as slow that you want it to go. It'll move as fast as you want it to go, or it'll move as slow or as fast as the court wants to take it. You have to control the narrative. You have to control the court. And you always have to have them on the defensive all the time. That's why I say don't go in and talk. Stay out of that courtroom like the plague. You'll get a paper telling you when to come. You know, make sure you got a 30-day stretch between the time you filed the challenge of jurisdiction until the time there will be a default when you'd be called into court. So you have to try to keep 30 days between you and that court if possible. Or you go into court if you can't help it, and you got to go into court and say, well, look, I really need counsel, so I need some time to do that. They'll give it to you. They have to. But if you're given a hard time, if you go into the court and you tell them that they haven't got jurisdiction and you got to ask for their bonds and this and that, I understand that. We used to do that. I would never do that again. It really destroys everything you got going for yourself. They got control. They control the narrative. He slaps the hammer down, and that's the way it's going to go. You got to get the papers. That is the law, the process, the procedure. They cannot fight that procedure. They'll try to argue it, but they're not going to be able to win.
I have some comments about that, but I really can't remember the
other thing they'll tell you, in those lower courts especially, they're going to tell you it's not a criminal case. So that even empowers you more when you move this case to challenging that jurisdiction and using the default to get out of that.
Okay. What I called about was I had heard that I received a message that said you were following your case and anyone that wants to get in on the case.
Oh, yes. Yes, on the same page, if you go to nationalliberty.org, highlight members, come down to court forms, same page that you saw these instructions on, and you'll see a paper. It says instructions to join.
I can't even find members. So.
Well, on the top blue bar, you'll see a blue bar where the files are.
Top blue bar says menu. The top blue bar says menu, right?
What website are you on?
NLA's.
You're on nationalliberty.org. Okay.
Yes.
On the top, there's a blue bar on the top. It's got welcome, news, queue, free courses, and so on, all the way over to members.
Right.
Highlight members. Don't click on it. Highlight it. Scroll down.
I did not see members. I just don't see members there. I'll go back and look, but anyway.
Signed in. You may not be signed in. Are you logged out or logged in?
Oh, that's it. I'm not signed in. I wasn't signed in. You're right.
I think the members page is only to members. Okay, so if you're not a member, you can't see this page and you can't get to this stuff.
Okay, good.
I think that's the only thing that we require people to be a member is the things underneath members. But everything else, all the other information, filings and everything, people can see and do without becoming a member. But in any event, sign in. You come down, you find the form, the page for the forms. On that it says instructions to join your case to the grand jury action, which we're getting ready to file. Anybody that wants to join their case, click on that and read the instructions very carefully. And there's only a few questions we need the answers to, and just follow the instructions, like name, address, phone. Name of court, address of court, and the name of the judge. That's basically what we need. And
let me tell you my problem.
Well, we'll make it very short because your case will always be a case of due process, but go ahead.
I had the code enforcement case. They came after me, no notice, hearing, no due process. I had no voice at all.
I don't hear anymore. You can move your case and we can take it into...
Wait a minute. You have to hear this because I filed a countersuit, everything. I appealed to circuit court. They found me guilty. They kept talking about abatement, okay? They kept saying if I get the work done, that they would generally what they do is dismiss the charges. But if
what
you go,
kind of work are they looking to be done? A code violation in your home?
Yeah, I built an addition. So long story short, NLA happened to refer me to somebody. I actually got some help, and everything changed because they were hauling me into court all the time, fining me. I couldn't even do the work, because I was defending myself and paying these fines, and it was just craziness. And so anyway, I got a hold of somebody. He told me exactly what to do, and I did it, and everything started changing. I don't know if that was it, but I suspect that it was. So, but they kept telling me, the prosecutor kept telling me I was under abatement, and if I get the work done, the charges would be dismissed. So I'm up onto the last.
Let me finish this.
So I'm to the last. I'm to the final inspection. I've got one more thing to do, which is siding and gutters. No big deal. I had a contractor here today. So I'm about to finish this and get a final inspection. My problem is this. Oh, and then they, in this process, they found me guilty, and then they filed another suit. They filed a new case. And I was just not even believing what was happening. And then just, I'm going to make a long story short. They abruptly canceled that case. I went in there one day. There was a
new guy. What's your problem now? Where are you at now that there's a problem?
I'm trying to tell you that. So they canceled.
Give me the short version because we're running out of time. And
They canceled the second case. They canceled the second case. So, and they just said, I know he said something about the person is no longer employed with them. So I'm wondering if they got rid of the guy that come after me. But anyway.
Okay, but the second case is gone. What's left?
So, well, there's nothing left except I have a criminal charge filed against me. I have a criminal record.
Did you go to jail? They
have harmed me. The whole second case, they threatened me with jail. You know, every time I went to court, they would threaten me with jail.
Hold it. You skipped a whole bunch then. Look, you went into court, they found you guilty of something, and then they gave you some kind of a sentence or a punishment of some kind?
They just kept fining me, and I had to pay the fines.
I'm a builder. I'm retired, and I've done a lot of construction management, and I've built a lot of homes and additions and all kinds of things and so on and so forth. So I've been through all this stuff. It is true they could try to put you in jail if you don't follow their codes, blah, blah, blah. When I go to an area, just a real quick story, you know, when I go to an area or do something in a place that I know that's going to be a problem to me, I go pull the permit and then have an architect go down and tell them they don't have to show up on the job because he's going to take care of things and certify it. So that's one way you can keep yourself away from an inspector that's a problem.
I'm done with all that.
Listen, I'm not just talking to you. I'm talking to other people. So you're beyond that point, and you're just at the end point. So fulfill your thing and ask for your being released, the abatement to take place, and that's it. Okay.
Well, this is my thing. I think they've lied to me, and that I'm going to end up with criminal charges and basically scarred for life.
Go down and talk to the sheriff to see if there's any kind of criminal things hanging over you that I don't understand how they can charge you with criminal things if they're fining you. It's not criminal. It's a fine. It's a code criminal.
Yes, Virginia has this freaky thing where they file against you criminal.
I don't know anything about that. They use the words criminal all the time. They won't tell you it's a criminal case, but then yet you can go to jail, but then they try to say, well...
They filed criminal charges against me. It's definitely criminal charges.
What's the conclusion of those criminal charges? What's the conclusion? The judge has to make a decree.
They found me guilty. If you go on the court list, plug in my name, and you go to criminal and you look it up, my case comes up and it says guilty.
Okay. Now, I don't understand how all that works on a code violation. It's just beyond me. So you got a unique situation somewhere.
And they never produced one piece of evidence at all. Nothing. Nothing.
Well, then now you could move that. Well, again, I'd have to think that out because the case is done with. But you can move that into, I'll just kind of think of an idea maybe of moving it into federal court. Because of violating your right of due process, okay, and you want this case to be overturned. Okay?
I've already done all that. When I countersued, I brought all that up.
You went into a federal court.
No, I did not go to the highest I went was circuit court.
That's the only place you're going to get any satisfaction, because you go into a state court. It sounds like at that level and with that kind of a law, you're not going to win anything there. Besides that, the jurisdiction on a constitutional challenge is the jurisdiction of the federal district courts. It says so in the Constitution.
Well, this is what I intend to do. I intend to finish the last work here I have, get the final inspection, and then go to them and say, the prosecutor told me all along that if I abated the work, that the charges would be dismissed, and find out what they say.
That's the first thing you gotta do.
And then if they tell me that, oh, that was not true. I don't know why he said that, you know, that kind of thing. I intend to file suit against them for harming me, you know,
well,
for this.
You can go and talk to the prosecutor, and dude, that's who you got to talk to. You don't want to go to the court to talk to him about these things. You want to go to the prosecutor.
The prosecutor was changing. The prosecutor was changing like every court appearance, you know.
So what? But the prosecutor that told you that, you go back to that person, and you say, "Hey, look, you told me this. This was the agreement. I fulfilled that.
He's
do?
He retired and left. So he's not even
Then you go
anymore.
To the other prosecutor to see if he's going to honor, which he should, the words of the prosecutor before him. If not, you got to go to the other prosecutor and get an affidavit from him. And if you don't get an affidavit from him, at least you go talk to him and you make your own affidavit. You write up the facts of the matter of what took place, the conversation before during the case, the fact of the matter of what took place when you went to talk to them, and you tell the whole story on that. Only on that, okay, stay on point, because you're dealing with trying to get rid of that case, to have it, thrown out. But you don't even know what's going to happen yet, so we're kind of talking in the wind here.
If I find out that they're going to try to make that charge stick, then I would be interested in joining the case. But I guess, I'm sort of preliminary here.
Right. All right, well, look, it's after midnight. We got to move on. We have a lot of callers in the queue. We're not going to be able to get to them, so we're going to close down. But, anybody that wants to maybe bring their questions up next week, make sure you get into the queue as soon as we turn it on to Q&A, and then we'll try to pull you first, as long as you can get in there quickly. But Okay, and again, look, go through the process, see what happens. If they give you a problem, you get the paperwork on it, and we'll try to give you some ideas on what you might be able to do. But I think they're going to drop it. I cannot see, and again, if he said that this would be dismissed, then I'm sure that it would be. Why wouldn't the other one? I'm sure it's on the record somewhere, okay?
Well, my concern about this is
you conform to what they wanted you to do. So why are they going to give you a hard time at this point?
But it took a long time because, like I said, I was defending myself against them, their attacks and everything. And plus they were fining me. So I had told them in the beginning, I'm retired. I do this. I'm trying to get this work done as my resources allow. And it just took 10 times as long with them entering into the whole situation and interfering than it would have had I just been able to finish it, without all that.
Right. Well, there's a lot of things that could have been going on. You might have brought up a lot of issues that rub them the wrong way, and they get irritated, and then they get angry, then they do things that they shouldn't be doing, and it goes on. Or, it could be another thing. I don't know what really took place, but I will tell you.
I got the feeling that they really didn't know.
Yeah,
I think they were using a statute.
Every time there's a situation comes up, okay, you got to deal with it and end it. You can't let it go on forever, and you got to take control of that. And the way you do that is you move to the higher court, okay, for a decision. If they're violating your unalienable right one way or another, then that's what it takes to really go into a higher court.
I know you say that, but it takes $400 to file
moving
in federal
court. Not true. It costs, I think it's $405, but in any event, that's filing a case. You're not filing a case. You're moving the case for a writ of habeas, for a writ, okay, ordering the court something. Okay, that's what you're moving it for. So they're only looking at that one issue. They're not looking at the whole case. You're not moving a whole case over there. It's just the issue that you have. So whenever you have an argument, if you find yourself fighting the judge, and believe me, I fought a lot of judges. We spent a lot of time in court, and it's just waste of time. But, the school of hard knocks. As soon as you find yourself in clash with the court, you got to take that business out of that court, that issue out of that court. Okay, and so how do you do that? You take it into the state court and in the federal court. But again, if it's a constitutional issue, you got to go straight up to the federal court, in my opinion.
I looked at, it was, to remove it was $500. It was even more. And then to file a case, it was $400.
No, that's an appeal. It's $500 to appeal a case, not to move it. You won't, I've already been through on the federal level. You talk about the federal court, district courts?
Yeah, to appeal it, it's $400.
Appeal. You're not appealing your case. You're looking for a single decision of a problem in the court where the judge is out of order. And you want to fix that and straighten that up. That's what you're doing. That's the issue. Okay? And if the court doesn't have jurisdiction, you might as well take the issue in to challenge the jurisdiction and get out of there.
Well, if I knew, I wouldn't. I have a problem with, I've heard of a person, their farm, their family farm was taken from him, and he went all the way up to, he went to the federal court and paid that money and everything. And then they came back and said he was filing a frivolous suit. So that's all they do is take your money.
He didn't want to win. He wanted to fight. Or he didn't know that he wanted to fight and when he really wanted to win. Look it. You got to conclude every issue that comes up in court. You got to make a conclusion to it. You got to control the conversation of the court. Okay, you need to put them on the defense. Everybody in the defense. And if the court becomes a problem, you got to put the court on defense by challenging what they're saying by having another judge look in to rule on it. You got to fix the problems. You can't let that problem fermenting the case for 6 months, 8 months as it moves along on other conditions, because it only builds. And then you frustrate them more and you piss them off, which they don't have the right to get pissed off or frustrated, because you're standing up for your rights and you're telling them they don't have the authority and you're telling them this and that and all these other things. And it, maybe you're one of the, you're a man on the land maybe you're not a citizen of the United States.
Well,
all stuff to them is crazy, crazy world, and you're not going to help your case or get anything accomplished.
I filed the counter suit, and I brought up due process. I brought up that no evidence had been submitted.
Did you open a record?
It is a court of record. Circuit court's a court of record.
Well, they may be a court of record operating a equity court out of it, because, you know, every court case I've gone into, even though you open up courts of records, they're equity courts. There's no true court of record to be found. But at least if you're going to the case, because they're coming against you, they're coming
it's
against
a county,
you.
It's a county circuit court, so.
Is there a jury there?
There was not a jury. I could have asked for a jury.
You're in an equity court.
Yeah.
You've received the jurisdiction of equity. That's where you're at. If there's no jury, you're in an equity court.
I had always heard that the juries are rigged. And
they
so
are.
I just
that
yeah,
doesn't
and
mean
I just
you,
I'm like
in, that doesn't mean you can't win the jury over to you. Look, you have the opportunity to bring logic and justice and righteousness in front of the jury and convince the jury. There's a lot of things. You know, everything, when you're getting in court, especially if they're coming at you with criminal, it all begins with intent. Okay, that's what they got to prove to begin with. And you got to make sure the jury understands that and where your intent was. Let's say you were fighting the IRS and you're following the decisions of the grand jury. Okay, I'm not the grand jury, but the United States Supreme Court. And you're using their decisions and their conclusions in the court cases to do your dealings with maybe the IRS or somebody, and you're in court making that battle, okay? Well, you relied on them, and the United States Supreme Court says the people should rely on us, and you can't punish a person for relying on our decisions, okay? So you need to find those cases. And I have all those cases. I've got a file called Footnotes. That's what it's called. It's called Footnotes. And each one of those footnotes is listed by a subject. You'll find that up on our website. You can get that. And it'll be in the book, and it'll be – we'll put that in a – I'm going to move that to a more prominent place. I think I'll move that over – the place where we have the forms. I'll put footnotes there. And people will be able to find a lot of United States Supreme Court cases, a lot of good law, and you know, just things you know, that our founding fathers said, and positions and interpretations of the Constitution, you know, clear interpretation, using either the Federalist Papers, Black's Law, various Supreme Court cases. And this is all your when you make an argument, you pull these conclusions out and you stick them into your case. But again, you know, you have to understand how it works. You know, you're in there, you have no
record. I did.
No record in there, really. I mean, how many papers have you filed?
Well, I filed the countersuit, and then I appealed, so I would have filed something with that.
When you filed the countersuit, did they respond to your countersuit?
No, they just treated it with complete disregard. Complete.
Default. There's a default right there. You do an affidavit of default, the whole system's thrown out.
I moved to dismiss.
You
can
do what you want with your words. They don't care. Everything has to be done in paper certified, notarized. If you don't do it that way.
Yes, I did that.
Okay.
Everything they did.
The federal court for cause have the whole thing thrown out. It's done. Your case is open now. You won.
Well, that's
you just have to know how to file.
If they don't dismiss the charges, which I doubt they're going to do, I think that I'm going to have to.
If you sued them and they defaulted, they did not answer, then everything you said on that paper rules that court. Everything. You file an affidavit of default, you file it with the court, and you demand the conclusion. You know, that's how you get out of there. And if they don't, if they just ignore that, then you have to move it into federal court for cause. But with that, we got to go because of, yeah.
Do you think that that's kind of how I should ask for them to dismiss the case, like file the affidavit of default?
You have the federal court cease and desist the whole thing, but you have to again look at. You have to file the papers properly. You have to serve everyone properly. You got to serve the notice of a motion, the notice of the motion, moving it into federal court. You got to file an affidavit of default when they default that there. And again, the only thing you're going to argue or discuss there is the constitutional issues, okay? And when you find out that the court rules. And we've got some court rulings that you can use on this. Again, it'll be in the footnotes when I get them up there. But we've got some court rulings that say that once the court is found without jurisdiction, everything that court has done is null and void. It's the what is it? What do they call that? The fruit of the poisonous tree. Okay, the whole case has been destroyed. Okay,
it just seems to me when they did not submit one piece of evidence at all. That they had no standing at all, you know?
But they don't care. They'll do what they want, and you're going to get beat up for it. Look, you've already won this case, and you don't even know it. And I'm going to tell you one more time, and you can go back and you can re-listen to this on the audio if you want get it. Okay? Now, this is it. Very, very clear. Right now, put your affidavit of default in on that, and that everything you said in your paper rules that court. Let them ignore that, okay? When they ignore that, now you move it into federal court, and that federal court has the power and the authority and should be doing this, is to shut that whole court down, cease and desist. Everything that court has done is null and void. And I'll get the Supreme Court ruling that makes that case clear for you. Maybe I'll have it out.
In my thinking, and since I'm so close to finishing, I thought I should just go ahead and get the final inspection and then try to deal with this.
Well, I agree with that. Yes, you might
so
not
that
even
they don't have any argument about the work, you know,
right.
Or whatever.
You're right. We may be arguing a case that is never going to come, that's not even going to happen because, yeah, you might be able to file the papers. They're going to remember and honor the words that the other prosecutor said. And everything's going to be thrown out, and all is good. And if not, now you've got what you could do.
Yeah.
But at least hopefully
someone
else.
I have serious doubt about that, though.
could have learned from what we just spoke about. But look, at you need to learn what we just spoke about anyway. Because if this happens to you again, you need to be able to neutralize these problems immediately. You can't continue to go back and forth. Look, if they're controlling the narrative and they're leading you around the court by the nose, you got a problem. No, you got to control the narrative. And there's no arguments to be made with a judge. You tell the judge the way it is. You do it in writing. And if he argues the point or ignores the point, then you know that you got the that you're dead right. Now you can move that to the next step. And remember, every case, on the state level anyway, probably the county level too, okay? Because you got to go to your constitution to see if a county court. What court is a court of record? So any court that is a court of record that you're in and you have a problem with the judge, you can ask for a reconsideration of their decision in that case as the case is going on from whatever bad decision he made, and you can request it to be done by a panel, a court panel, a judge panel. I've requested this before in the past, requests for reconsideration, and every time the judge came back and said, yeah, I considered it, but I stick him up with it. You can't let that guy make the decision, okay?
I requested summary judgment at one point.
You'll find in the statutes that there's a procedure that when you challenge the judge as far as the decision for reconsideration, that you have two options, to either A, allow the judge sitting that's ruling in that court to make that reconsideration, or B, have a panel. I don't know how many panel would be on that panel. I presume at least three. So you'd have a panel of judges. Now you got three minds. And if you write a good paper, a powerful paper, and your case is powerful, at least concerning this, the issue, you're not fighting the case, just the issue that you want to overturn to get the case to be moving in your direction, okay? You got three people and you make a good position, there's a better chance of getting something done because, they'll argue the case between themselves. Hey, I read this case and that's pretty powerful. And this woman has a point here. Look at it. It's a jury. It's what you got. At least more than one. I did win a traffic case
one time by requesting a jury. That's exactly what happened.
Well, again,
When I got there, there was no jury.
I don't want to get into another case now because we really are way over. If you want, we could talk another time. But go find out what's going to happen with this case before you come back with it again. And I'd be interested to find out how they go about on it. And if you have a problem, we'll try to give you some thoughts. But you need the papers and to understand what the conclusions are and what is over your head as far as a criminal thing or whatever. You need to understand.
Well, mine so far is kind of a good.
All right. Well, we could talk again. And but we got to go now. Okay.
Okay.
All right. Head out of here. And anybody wants to join the case, their case in with our case, fill out that form, and we'll talk to you a little bit about it, and get your petition for that purpose to move that case in, and we'll file that with our case, and we'll let you know how that's going to work.
Am I still on here?
Yeah, you are.
I just wanted to add that it seems very exciting. I did not know that you were going to add cases to your case.
We just decided it. We got a lot of things we're definitely going to add. All of our habeas corpus cases we're going to add. All of our indictments we're going to add. We're going to add in all of the nonjudicial foreclosure cases we were involved with.
Yeah.
And now we're going to add just about any case anybody has anywhere if they're stuck in the courts. And, there's a certain criteria, but I would think 98% of the cases out there will fall within the criteria we have. There may be some cases in certain categories we might not be able to have it join with us. But we're coming in a very unique way.
That sounds very exciting to me. I don't know,
Yeah, we're coming in a very, very unique way that we're not going to discuss the details of that yet, but when we're ready to make the filing, we will discuss those details and on how exactly we're going about to do something very, very extraordinary. Okay, but yet everything we're doing has, you know, what's the word I'm looking for, has, well, let's just say has a past, has a background, it's part of our legal process. Okay, so anyway, we'll discuss that when we get closer, and we're hoping to file in about a month. The only thing holding us back is the completion of the writing of the papers, that's all. We're still writing memorandums. So, mm-hmm. All right, with that, we're going to close down. All right, good night, everybody, and Lord willing, we'll be back next Monday. Hopefully everybody will join us again, and we'll continue our conversations, and we'll have another subject to bring up next week, and we'll just take it from there. Good night.